right is legislative mandate from the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, the Pan-South African Act number 50.
The community, it uplifts the dignity of the community for providing acceptable and humane sanitation service, job creation and skills transfer to the local community, averted environmental disasters, and I think most of you know that in our day, we are sitting on dolomitic land. It is not dolomitic land, we are sitting on our water resources. That is very crucial for the province. And then we have all community households benefited from the project.
Proposed or existing legislation, practice and policy dealing directly or indirectly with language matters as at any level of government and with regard to any proposed amendments to or the repeal or the replacement of such legislation, practice and policy. B, make recommendations to organs of state at all levels of government where it considers such action advisable for the adoption of measures aimed at the promotion of multilingualism within the framework of the Constitution. C, actively promote an awareness of multilingualism as a national resource. Actively promote the development of the previously marginalized languages. E, initiate studies and research aimed at promoting and creating conditions for the development and use of all the official languages of the Republic, the Khoi and San languages, and the South African Sign Language. Promote and ensure respect for all other languages commonly used in the, by communities in South Africa. Advise on the coordination of language planning in South Africa. Facilitate cooperation with language planning agencies outside South Africa. Establish provincial language committees and national bodies to advise it on any language matters affecting a province or a specific language. Chair, I'm going to show you what provinces are doing through these structures of PANSA. And this is where we are actually close to our people, to our clients. And this actually you'll see in the activities that they do, that they are very much involved at the ground. Establish national lexicography units to operate as companies limited by guaranteed under Section 21 of the Companies Act of 1973. And allocate funds to the units for the fulfillment of their functions. I will also demonstrate that we are about to set up this unit for the sign language. In terms of Section 4 of the PANSAG Act, the board is an independent organ of state, subject only to the Constitution and its founding legislation, and must perform its duties without fear, favor, or prejudice. All organs of state are enjoined to cooperate with the board and may not interfere with the functions of the board in its execution of its mandate. Our vision is to achieve the equal status and use of all official languages of South Africa, and our mission is to provide for the recognition, the promotion, and the development of all South African languages, with particular attention being given to those languages that were previously marginalized. Let me correct that. Development of all official South African languages. Values. Our values are the respect for all official, or for all, our values are respect for all languages in South Africa, equal treatment of all South African languages, non-discrimination on the basis of language. Now, the purpose is for multilingualism by developing and promoting equal use and status of all official languages. Another purpose is for creation, is the creation of conditions for the national unity and respect for the Bill of Rights as it is enshrined in the Constitution. Our purpose is also to see to the implementation of language policies at all levels of government, language development plans, projects and initiatives, appropriate research in support of language development, all measures meant to protect and support constitutional democracy with respect to languages. Our purpose, the third purpose, to be the agents of change by promoting public dialogue to change mindsets and attitudes to language, promoting the value of indigenous languages, monitoring the application of language legislation, advising government on linguistic matters. Now, as I come closer to dealing with issues that relate to sign language, I would like to give this background that South African Sign Language is recognized and used as a first language by approximately 500,000 deaf South Africans. Since 1996, South African Sign Language has been officially recognized as the language of learning and teaching for the majority of deaf learners in South Africa. Government policies also acknowledge South African Sign Language as the means through which deaf people become economically and intellectually empowered. This in turn has increased the awareness of the need for accessible social and legal services, equal education opportunities, and therefore the need for South African Sign Language interpreting services. Because of the lack of awareness in the South African society, deaf people experience language barriers in public sectors. This means that there is a great need for professionals in different fields to learn South African Sign Language in order to provide efficient access to service. All this will help deaf people to contribute equally to the South African economy. PANSALT has since established a national language body for sign language and appointed a South African sign language practitioner to service this body. Now, I would like to present to you, Honorable Chair, initiatives in each province that PANSALT has been engaged in to promote the issues of the deaf. If I start with the Northern Cape, in 2007, we conducted two workshops in this province. These workshops were organized in partnership with DEFSA, National Head Office, and Northern Cape Branch. The workshops were supported by Siyanda District Municipality, based in Uffington, and Emthanjeni Local Municipality, based in DR. The workshops reached more than 1,000 people. They were attended by deaf people, their families and relatives, police officers, nurses, community development workers, educators, counselors, municipal officials, the media, and ordinary community members. The aim of the workshop was to promote South African Sign Language and the deaf culture in the provision of service delivery. Now, we experience problems, Honorable Chair and members. There is still high unemployment rate and discrimination towards the deaf people in most provincial state departments. There is no school for deaf people in the Northern Cape. There is still violation of linguistic rights of the deaf people provincially. One example which was cited in Northern Cape was when the police handcuffed a deaf person for arrest and failed to read them their rights. There is not a single deaf person who is employed in the departments that were visited by PANSALT in Northern Cape, which included the following: the South African Police Services, Health, Social Services, DR and Uffington District. If we move to the next province, the Northwest, in 2005 to 2007, PANSALT conducted workshops for parents of the deaf communication with their children during school vacation. We are currently planning a workshop for community members at Merafong Municipality. In 2008, Honorable Chair, PANSAB recommended two students who ultimately received bursaries to study sign language at Wits University. Funding was sponsored by the Department of Arts and Culture in the Northwest. And we also have challenges in this province. For example, the project has been discontinued, that is the project of training parents, due to the lack of funding. Presently, there are no known accredited service providers of sign language in the Northwest. If we move to Gauteng, Honorable Chair, between the 4th and the 8th of September 2006, PANSAL facilitated sign language training for frontline workers at the Pretoria Academic Hospital. This training was to equip frontliners workers to, excuse me, this training was to equip frontline workers of the hospital with basic sign language in order to ensure effective communication towards the deaf clients visiting the hospital on any day. 20 frontline workers were trained and certified. PANSAL provided funding for South African Sign Language Interpreters for the groundbreaking conference on early childhood and deafness held in August 2007, entitled Building Bridges in Africa, Early Childhood Development for Children with Hearing Loss, organized by the University of Witwatersrand Center for Deaf Studies. The conference focused on early intervention of deaf babies. During PANSAB 2007 Multilingualism Awards, University of Witwatersrand Center for the Deaf Studies received the coveted prize for their sterling work in this area. Our challenge in this area also is that workers in most public institutions are not conversant in sign language. As a result, this creates a barrier in service delivery, Chairperson. If we look at other issues in this province, on the 30th of November 2006, PANSAB facilitated a provincial sign language interpreters workshop. 70 interpreters attended the workshop and deliberated on the challenges faced by sign language interpreters in Gauteng. At the end of the workshop, a task team comprising of PANSAB, the Department of Education, SASLink, Gauteng Provincial Language Committee, and the Department of SARS was formed. The task team was formed to look at the drafting of South African Sign Language Interpreters Guidelines document. On the 20th of September 2007, PANSAB, in cooperation with DEFSA, hosted a schools debate for deaf learners. Almost all the schools of the deaf in Gauteng were represented. We also have a challenge in this regard, that the lack of guidelines lead to mushrooming of private companies who exploit the deaf. If we move to the Free State province, PANSAB is funding training of 10 South African Sign Language Interpreters in the Free State University. The trained candidates will receive accreditation and be placed on the PANSAB database of sign language interpreters in Free State. The project is a joint venture with the organizations that are representing the deaf community, like such as DEFSA, NDISISA, and PAPSAL. PANSAB is funding a project that is developing teaching and learning materials in sign language. This project is done in partnership with the University of Free State. The finished materials, which are a video teaching and learning modules, will be launched on the 26th of September this year. A challenge in this regard, there are only 3 qualified sign language interpreters conducting training at the 3 tertiary institutions in the Free State. Now, if you move to Limpopo, Between 2006 and 2007, PANSALP in the province conducted basic South African Sign Language training in the following hospitals. In Polokwane, it was between the 10th and the 13th of April 2006, and this was financed by Sports, Arts and Culture Department, 20 attendees. The training was done at Nobel between the 18th and 21 September 2006. This was financed by PANSALP, and 20 attendees were trained. At Mankweng, training was done between the 6th and 10th November 2006. The financing was done by Mankweng Hospital. 20 attendees presented themselves for training. At Polokwane, between 29 and the 1st of June, 29th May and the 1st of June 2006, the training was financed by Polokwane Hospital, and 20 attendees came. At Lubowahomo, the training was done between the 3rd and the 7th of September, and the 7th and the 8th of September in 2007. This training was financed by Lubowahomo Hospital, and 20 attendees came. Now, we have other initiatives that have been done in Limpopo. On the 4th of September 2007, during the Deaf Week, PANSALP, in collaboration with Deaf Federation of Limpopo, submitted a memorandum to the Office of the Premier for South African Sign Language to be recognized as one of the official languages of South Africa. On the 6th November 2007, workshop for parents and siblings of the deaf, on the 6th November 2007, a workshop was conducted for parents and siblings of deaf children. In July 2008, there would be a South African Sign Language training for hospitals. In August 2008, there would be a follow-up workshop for deaf parents. From the 1st of September to the 7th, there would be a Deaf Awareness Festival. We have a challenge also here, Honorable Chairperson. Most teachers who are teaching in deaf schools in this province have limited knowledge of deaf language. As a result, they can't sign, for instance, in scientific terms. These are some of the challenges that we are facing as the organization. Now, if we move to Western Cape, between 2005 and 2006, PANSALP funded the Center for the Deaf in the Worcester system to establish an infrastructure for the development of South African Sign Language. Maybe let me repeat that. In 2005 and 2006, PANSALP funded the Center for the Deaf in Worcester. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Worcester. Okay, thank you very much. Let me start again. In 2005, between 2005 and 2006, PANSALP funded the Center for the Deaf in Worcester to establish an infrastructure for the development of South African Sign Language and training for the deaf. The following are the initiatives that have been done in Mpumalanga. On the 25th January 2008, South African Sign Language National Body held a workshop on the use of South African Sign Language interpreters at Tandukolo Special School in Witbank. This workshop was organized in collaboration with Mpumalanga DEFSA and funded by PANSALP. The purpose of the workshop was to inform and educate the deaf community about, one, the availability of South African Sign Language interpreters, two, the code of ethics of South African Sign Language interpreters, the linguistic rights of the deaf, the role of PANSAP translation and interpreting focus area. These are some of the initiatives for 2008-2009. PANSAP plans to undertake the following projects among others during 2008-2009. One, establishing a national lexicography unit for South African Sign Language that will be responsible for the compilation of the spelling and orthography rules for the sign language. Also, this NLU will be responsible for reviewing the dictionary for the deaf. It will also establish a language in education, that is PANSAP, the national language body for the deaf, will establish a language in education technical committee within its structures to look into the implementation of the language in education policy as far as the South African Sign Language is concerned. Through the South African High Commissioner in Malawi, Mrs. Tselo, we will create linkages between deaf schools in South Africa and Malawi. The High Commissioner is leading in this process. Honorable Chair and members of the Joint Committee, I would like then to end here and thank you for listening to me and thank you for the opportunity to make this presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Nkosi. Thank you for your presentation and thank you to the CEO of PANSAP. I'm opening the floor for honourable members to pose questions to Ms. Nkosi. I see honourable member Chalmers.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must say I found it a most fascinating presentation and very encouraging as well. I'm just feeling, could I make a passionate plea for a visit to the Eastern Cape and some developments there. I see the Eastern Cape and KZN there does not seem to be, according to this document, a lot going on. I would also like to know, you mentioned provincial language committees. Do they, in fact, have they been established? Do they exist? Because I think that is something that is very necessary. I think it is. I mean, I'm not quite sure exactly what their mandate would be, what their role would be. But in general, I find it very encouraging that there are practical work going on the ground, workshops being organized, because I do, coming from a family where there is some deafness, I just know how marginalized and how separated out, even in some ways more than the blind, the deaf become very marginalized in society. I would also just like to know, what is the dictionary for the deaf? Maybe you could just, how does that work? I'm sure our chairperson could also maybe give a little input on that. But mainly I would like to know if there's any work going on in the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chalmers. Honourable Andrew.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wish to echo the sentiments expressed by Honourable Chalmers. Ms. Nkosi, indeed, it has been a very enlightening presentation. It's also very heartening to hear of your endeavors in all the provinces. Firstly, I wish to ask with regard to any progress that has been made in terms of research and studies that has been initiated at the promoting and creating of conditions for the development and use of all official language, in particular the South African Sign Language. It's that's one of your functions. Then secondly, you have highlighted, Comrade Chalmers have raised the issue of marginalization to the extent that deaf people are literally excluded from society as a whole because of the issue of serious discrimination against them from a language perspective. And certainly this is one of your values, to ensure non-discrimination, you see. So certainly there has to be more vigorous and robust and endeavors to make sure that those trains that keeps deaf people in prison must break it. That is very important, and you are the official body that needs to do enormous work with regard to that. You also highlighted the challenge with regard to education, in particular the teachers not very capable of signing to deaf students. So by and large, deaf students are forced to do lip reading, are forced to, if the teacher doesn't write on the board, then certainly it's a problem for them. And we all know as former scholars, we know a teacher will speak and he will walk up and down the class. He won't face you constantly. So if you need to read lips, it's going to be a challenge because the teacher can't look at you constantly while you see is talking. So that indeed is a challenge. But the question is, given the fact that you identify that challenge, to what extent are there a partnership with the Department of Education to identify schools? Because we are talking about inclusive education, we expect deaf children to attend mainstream schools, to identify those kind of schools and teachers and works of them, like you have works of the parents, to be able to communicate with the children via sign language, because I think that should be a key a priority, Chairperson. Thank you.
Honourable Elizabeth.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Nkosi, I'd like to know, I see one of your mandates is to make recommendations to all the state. Therefore, I'd like to know, after finding that, for instance, in the Northern Cape, that there is no school for the deaf, what action did you take? And is it possible for you to give us a breakdown as to the different provinces you visited, how many deaf people there are in each province? And how many people in per province justifies a school of the deaf? Lastly, your budget for training. Because I noticed that in some provinces, the municipalities and other organizations assisted in funding workshops and things like that. Is it perhaps because you don't have a sufficient budget to train to give this workshop on your own, or what are the issues? Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. Before I'm going to give over, I just need to add to some of the questions and comments made. I should have asked a PANSOP for their budget, and we saw money, and we need to see where the money is going. You can email us the budget to where the money is then allocated towards South African Sign Language. I do support what's been said about education, and I agree what's been said about education. But the School Act mentioned South African Sign Language as a medium of education to children of the deaf. But the attitude of the teachers they do not accept South African Sign Language, but the Schools Act made provision for medium of instruction to the deaf learners, but the teachers' attitudes need to be changed, and the Department of Education in the provinces need to implement that. And I want to know from PANSAP, how do you assist the provincial departments to make sure that that Schools Act is enforced into the schools? And how are we going to change those teachers' attitudes within the school? They are in the schools. They are know that those children are deaf. But how are we going to change their attitudes to accept South African Sign Language? Yes, it's always the deaf child that teaches the teacher the signs. But I want to applaud KwaZulu-Natal, and I think you need to research on that province. There was one school in the KwaZulu-Natal, they invited a teacher with no payment of salary, voluntary. That teacher learned South African Sign Language. After 6 months, that teacher knew South African Sign Language, and then when that teacher knew knows South African Sign Language, then she got a salary. And she did that voluntary. And I'm telling you, it's not the only school that, and that is the only school in South Africa that uses South African Sign Language as a medium of instruction. They went to America. They learned and to see how to teach deaf people and how to be more effective. But my question is, how are you going to assist the Department of Education to address these needs? And the dictionary. For years, years ago, there was a dictionary, and it's gathering dust, and it's not being used. South African Sign Language is a living language, is an active language. So my question is, and your report for 2006-2007, your annual report, you will make a DVD. And we are living in a day of life of computers and DVDs, and I want to applaud you I heard that Khoi San have developed a DVD for their language and a dictionary. I want to applaud PANSAP therefore, but those printed dictionaries are creating dust, and that was maybe we can have those DVDs or a website, an interactive portal website where those deaf people can access or hearing people can access that portal and learn South African Sign Language. But I will leave my other questions for the next round, and for members that also want to ask some questions, can you then please answer our questions? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Let me start with a question that was raised by Honorable Chama, a plea for the Eastern Cape and KZN. Due to the short period of time for making this presentation, the KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape information was not actually delayed in coming because those two provinces, they were engaged in other activities. They were not in the office, so the information could not reach us on time. But there is work that is being done by PANSAP in these two provinces as well. Provincial language committees work, how do they, what is their mandate? Honorable member, PANSAP operates within its structure. There are structures of PANSAP. The first structure is the Provincial Language Committee, and we have the structures in all the 9 provinces. The mandate of these Provincial Language Committees is one, interact with the MECs of all the departments to ensure that language matters are being taken into the language matters within the department are being addressed. That is the function of the Provincial Language Committees. The Provincial Language Committee has got sub-units within itself. There is the language and education subunit within the Provincial Language Committee. There is translation and interpreting unit. There is the status language planning, which deals with the linguistic rights evaluation. There is sign language. So these are the subunits of the Provincial Language Committees. I remember when I was a chairperson of a Provincial Language Committee, I was interacting with the MEC of Education. I was interacting with the MEC of Arts and Culture with regards to their implementation of language policies within their units. So that is the task of the Provincial Language Committees. Another structure of PANSALB is what is called the National Language Bodies. We have got 13 of the structures in all parts of South Africa. We have one for, we have the 11 official languages, national language bodies. We have one for Khoi and sign languages. We have one for the South African sign language. So that is how extensive our structure is, so that we can deliver to the people of South Africa. We then have what you call the third structure is the National Lexicography Units. These are the units that are actually preserving our languages through the compilation of dictionaries. That is the monolingual dictionaries, bilingual dictionaries, and trilingual dictionaries. As you know, there's this great Sikosa dictionary that has been published by PANSALB in cooperation with the University of Fort Hare. Let me then go to the question, what is a dictionary for the deaf? As the Honorable Chairperson has indicated, there is a dictionary for the deaf, and she has rightfully pointed out that it is collecting dust. It is for this reason that PANSALB wants to start that project, to make it interactive, to download it in the internet, and then so that it can actually be accessible. So that is another project that we are starting, we are beginning to do with a collaboration from the University of Free State, of course. The next member, I would like to get his name, I didn't get it right, the Honorable
Madela.
Thank you. Honorable Madela wanted to know what progress has been made with regards to research in the issue of making sign language an official language. This is an ongoing work, Honorable Member. On the 6th of June, the Minister of Arts and Culture pronounced on this issue. Unfortunately, we rely on what the minister wants, because the issue of making the issue of raising the status of a language rests with the ministry. PANSALB makes the commendations, but it is the ministry that takes the decision to the National Assembly. You also raised the issue of the marginalization of the deaf people, especially with regards to language. Yes, this is a serious concern for us. And you ask, what is it, what rigorous attempts are we making on this one? Honorable Madela, I would like to state to this House that we are ourselves, we find ourselves in a position where, even though we can call people to hearings to so that they can actually answer for themselves why they are discriminating, we have got very little punitive measures to take, because in our act we have not actually the enforcement. In fact, during the 2008-2009, we are going to revise PANSALB Act so that we can have the enforcement. We can have all the monitoring regulations. That will
assist us, for instance, to have power. At this point in time, we can only call people for hearings, and then we just say, we make an opinion that you have not handled this matter well, and they leave the door, they continue with it. But once we have enforcement powers, that is when people will stop actually discriminating against the deaf. With regards to challenge of teachers with limited teaching skills, this is a serious problem, honorable members. I come from KwaZulu-Natal, and in my previous life, I was at a college of education, and I remember very well there was a program which was training teachers for the deaf at the college where I was. When the college is closed, that unit was supposed to go to UNISA, and UNISA closed it down, just like that. So there is a great need to start institutions, you know, to add to what to the institutions that we have, like Free State, like VETS. But we need a vibrant institution that is going to actually address these needs. That is why PANSAP is coming up with a plan to start what we call a multilingual institute, which will address these issues. And this is what we presented before the Portfolio Committee of Arts and Culture on the 13th of May, that PANSAP wants to start a multilingual institute, but we are limited because of the funding that we received from the Department of Arts and Culture. This year alone, we only received 47 million, which was there was a shortfall of 8 million, because last year we had 51 million, which was also caused by the fact that we had a lot of staff turn over. But we had 51 million. This year we got 47 million, which is we have a deficit of 8 million. This is a serious concern that we have. And I was expecting the members of the Portfolio Committee to assist PANSAP to insist to the Minister of Arts and Culture to increase our budget. They were silent on that one. I was there when the minister was presenting the budget, and no mention of PANSAP was made with regard to the increase of the budget. And I want to know, what is the role of the Portfolio Committee members with this regard? So I think we all have responsibilities. I will do my responsibilities, but the Portfolio members also need to take their responsibility in terms of interacting with the minister, because we had already given the Portfolio members the budget and we show them our budgetary constraints. If I respond to the Honorable Member Elizabeth? Ngalega? Oh, okay. Honorable Ngalega, thank you. You were also asking what action have we taken with regards to those people who actually violate the linguistic rights of the deaf. I think I will give you the same response, that with the lack of enforcement powers, we can only call them for hearings, and that is it. There is not much that you can do. And you ask us, how many people have we visited? I'm sorry, I cannot actually bring that information now. I would actually have to send it later, just to give you a synopsis of the number of people that we have visited. You've also inquired about the budget. As I indicated, perhaps let me just give you just an overview of the presentation on the budgetary issue which we presented before the Honorable Portfolio Committee members on the 13th of May. There we are. I showed the Honorable Members of the Arts and Culture Portfolio Committee the funding patterns for PANSAP. From 1999 to 2000, that's the amount that was given. 2000 to 2001, there it was. 2001 to 2002, we had a shortfall of 149,000. 2002 to 2003, we had another shortfall of 228,000. 2003 to 2004, we had a shortfall of 492 and 165. So that's the pattern. We are going down.
And you know, I was very disappointed by the Arts and Culture portfolio members. They were focusing that we are breaking the law. And we were saying that even the auditors have indicated that with the massive mandate that PANSAG has been given, it is national treasury that is causing us to be criminals, and it is not nice. We have got so much work to do, but you have given such a pittance. If you look, for instance, at the budget that was given for literacy by the National Assembly, they were given 6.6 billion. Literacy in South Africa, we have got 7 million people that are affected by literacy, but they were given 6.6 billion. Now, PANSAG is taking care of the entire country. And in 2007, in 2008, we were given 47 million. Now, let us make the comparison. How is it so? So those are the issues that I would like the parliamentarians to take seriously. We find it very difficult to assist or to address some of the concerns that you are raising with the kind of money that we're doing. When we exceed, we are told that we are criminals, but we are being made criminals. We don't want this. We want to run our methods in a very professional way and in a very compliant way. But the way things have been done, it is very, very sad, what you can see there. If I may continue with the comments that were made by the chair also referred to the issue of PANSAG budget, which I've already explained. She further alluded to the South African Schools Act, which indicates that the middle of instruction should be South African Sign Language, but teacher's attitude is not actually in line with the legislative mandate. But I would like to go back to the issue of enforcement. It's the issue of enforcement, and also it's the issue of training. Maybe the attitudes of teachers is because they are ignorant. They are not properly trained. And you also alluded to the issue of the White Paper 6, the inclusive education, which actually marginalized a deaf child in a mainstream education. Those are some of the issues that are really, really very serious. And you have indicated to us that we need to approach the Department of Education. We take that instruction from you very seriously. We are going to engage with the Department of Education to see to it that is it not possible for us to work together, and we will monitor the provision of teachers for the deaf. You also alluded to the dictionary that is collecting dust, and we have indicated that we want to take that dictionary and make it to be very interactive by actually downloading. In other words, it has not been updated. I think it's not, because South African Sign Language has moved over the years. So there are things that have actually been changing. That is why we want to actually review the dictionary. She also alluded to the availability of DVDs. Yes, the material that will be launching in September, which we are preparing in collaboration with the Free State University, there is a DVD there, because we want more interactive information as possible. So, honourable members and chair, this is my presentation and this is my response to your question. I hope I've addressed all of them. Thank you.
Honourable members, I see more hands. I will give a member from the IFP first, and I see members' hands are all up. And we'll take it 1, 2, 3, 4, like that. Honourable member from the IFP, thank you.
I'm Zalose from Nadeko. Okay. I hear Mrs. Ngosi is has a passion for what she's saying and also is frustrated by us as members and also by whatever else is happening within the department. I just wanted to comment on deafness. There was Inkandla School where teachers in KZN, the teachers used to go there for training. It was a school, an ordinary school, but they established a facility to train teachers to teach the deaf and also the blind. I don't know what has happened to that one. But again, I hear your frustration, but I think we tend to operate, the tendency is to operate in silos. Department of Education is responsible for educating the children. The arts and culture for the language, both sign and braille. And us here for the disabled. So I think somewhere what we need to be talking about is how do we correlate and make this work, I mean, all these three departments, so that it becomes effective. Because when you approach one department for something, many times it gets overlooked because people don't understand. Like you were talking about reinforcement. Reinforcement many times does not work, but it's the understanding. Once people have insight and understanding, before I worked in this committee, I did not understand disability. I had seen it, but it did not really, I did not fully comprehend. It's when you see it bit by bit that you become very much aware. Therefore, it means even our public is not very conscientized on it. And the very teachers, I've been a teacher, if you find you have 50 students and there's one that is disabled, from time to time you will attend, but many times that one person gets ignored, not deliberately, but it does happen that that one person will take the brunt, you know. I think it's the conscientization that is not being done properly. So I would rather we focus on educating our public, like with radio programs and even TV programs, then there is more awareness. The schools, the education department, working with this, I mean the portfolio committees, this one, that is to us, this portfolio committee, education and arts and culture, if they work together, yes, then we can achieve something. I think that's what we need to be looking at more than, yeah, thank you.
Sorry. Honorable Nalek.
Thank you, Chairperson. Unfortunately, ma'am, you've taken away the budget. No, I wanted to ask you something about the budget. I saw that there is a... go to the next slide. There is a rollover of some 400. Why did you... not? What happened that you had the rollover and not spend the money? Doesn't the rollover perhaps lead to your budget being cut by the minister? Thank you.
Honorable Mandela.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to indicate, you know, Mr. Nkosi, one, you cited the example of the literacy campaign, you see. And I was wondering, I mean, what is preventing yourself from accessing part of that 6 billion, you know, to fund programs relating to, because that 6 billion is not only to teach people to learn to read and write, you see. Sign language is an integral part of the skills that we need to acquire. So nothing... or to prevent yourself from putting in a proposal and accessing part of that 6 billion. Secondly, with regard to the PLCs, I'm tempted to ask. I must admit that I have absolutely no knowledge of our own PLC in this province where I am from, which is the Western Cape. Whether on that provincial language committee, whether the disabled are represented there, is there a deaf person on that committee? For me, that is important because where I come from, we firmly believe the slogan that says nothing about us without us. So a disabled person, by virtue of a deaf person, ought to be part of this provincial language committee, because I believe that only through the active involvement of the disabled community will we be able to elevate the challenges that disabled people are facing to the levels where indeed it can make a difference. Lastly, you have indicated that a DVD would be launched in somewhere in September, which is very good, and we want to welcome that. The question I want to ask in relation to that, to what an extent, because it seems to me it's a partnership between yourself and the University of Free State, to what an extent has the deaf community being involved in the production, the planning, and everything in relation to this DVD, because it will, in its intention is to make a tangible difference to the lives of deaf people, and one certainly hope that the organized deaf community through DEFSA, etc., have been party to what you will be launching. So thank you very much.
Anvoma.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to concur that Mr. Sinkosi, I think you are very passionate in your work that you do. However, I want to agree with Honorable Mr. Losi when she says that, you see, I think PANSA should not only work with art and culture, but also education, communication, and more with this committee that look to the issues of disabled persons in here, the deaf in particular. I'm from the Western Cape, and in the Western Cape, Worcester is known as one of the best deaf schools in the country, I think. Now, in 2005, 2006, you invested structured development for South African Sign Language in Worcester for training for the deaf. I just want to know, 3 years later, what was the progress? Is there something constructive that you can show that has really contributed to that kind of training? And also, the basic training that you conduct in hospitals for CDWs and so on, how effective is it? How long does it take, this introduction? Would it enable a person to communicate like what's your name, how are you, where do you come from, you know, those basic things that people normally ask? I just wanted to know the things.
Thank you, honorable members. Once again, I'm going to add some questions as well. My question was linked to your statistics. My question is linked to your statistics. You spoke about the hospitals where they've got this training and about 20 attendees. But where are they now? Those who were trained, where are they now? Are deaf people are still coming with a complaint that looks like they don't have access to police stations, to hospitals. But as you are giving statistics there, you are saying quite a few of them had been trained.
So obviously they've received a little bit of training, so obviously it would make the lives of deaf people a little bit easier. And do you encourage those that came for that training to continue with their sign language training? Because I know sign language training takes, to become a sign language interpreter takes 4 years to become an effective sign language interpreter. You don't just go once off 3 day training, you then become a sign language interpreter. Many of you do level one, you don't become a court interpreter. You make life risky then for the deaf, between freedom and going to jail. And that has been our experience in the deaf community. Receptive skills of sign language interpreters, receptive skills is very important and not an easy skill, and not all interpreters have that skill, and it takes years to develop. So we are those that received that training. I just want to say that South Africa has only 7 accredited interpreters. The whole country only has 7 accredited interpreters. There are only 3 in this country. That accreditation is made possible by DEFSA, SATI, South African Translators Institute, and UNISA, interpreter's mistake. And that team sets up the accreditation where they go provincially to all the provinces and they do the interviews with the interpreters. They then will assess the interpreters for them to get accredited. And on that panel, you would find, obviously, there would be deaf people on that panel who would then obviously evaluate those interpreters. So, Pansala, I think maybe you need to take up that responsibility. We need to maybe get more interpreters accredited. Your involvement in that, I think, is very important. And then one of the CETAs gave DEFSA some money to have a 3-year training course for people to become skilled interpreters. And that CETA and DEFSA would work with UNISA. It's a long waiting list for many people who want to become skilled interpreters. So we are waiting for the CETA to approve that proposal to get that funding. But I think what we need is Pansalab on that team, you know, to work with other bodies, to work with the CETAs. We need your assistance, your lobbying, to help us lobby to get those type of initiatives launched. I don't know if I'm out of order here, members. Maybe you must rule me out of order here, but I just want to say I'm not happy with the Free State. I would prefer you, as Pan Salib, maybe to talk to the director of DEFSA, because the director of DEFSA has gone overseas, and the funders who funded that project are not happy with what they've seen, and I'm worried if you are still going to continue with that project with Free State. If Pan Salib is promoting sign language and that project to really become, and sign language to really become successful in our country, I think Pan Salib needs to maybe look closely into that matter, because we've got some information from funders, from the funders. For example, sorry to tell you, Rufte is very white, and I'm sorry to mention this, very Afrikaans, very male-dominated. Deaf are not involved in their projects. And many of our deaf act as puppets, and we are not involved in their programs. I'm very critical here. I've seen it. It affects our lives as deaf people. Yes, as honorable members said, is deaf people involved in these things? Are we empowered? Are we part of these structures? That is the other question. Our quote is, nothing about us without us. Are you working with these structures, but do these structures then have deaf people on them? That is important to us. Also, I just want clarity. DEFSA just last year came in front of the Joint Constitutional Review Committee. They came in front before that committee last year, where they have applauded and actually made a recommendation. This committee made a recommendation that sign language become an official language. That committee report was then given to Parliament, and it was adopted in Parliament last year. there's a few recommendations, but there's one recommendation particularly regarding sign language to become an official language, and as you made a comment where you said, well, it depends on the minister. So, I mean, do you have that adoption, that report that was adopted in Parliament, do you have it? How do you then work with the Minister and the Department of Arts and Culture to see that recommendation is taken forward? As you say, you have a constitutional mandate. If the community is lobbying to have this language, an official language, and it's a recommendation made by Parliament, what then, how do you take this matter forward? We don't want a year again for another 10 years. We're going to research sign language. We're going to research sign language 14 years down the line. It's about 5,000, as you said, that numbers of people who are using sign language, they're still asking for access to our language. That is what we're asking for. We cannot have another 10 years of research. Research is important, but not another 10 years before it becomes an official language. And then in your presentation, in your purpose, where you say you advise government on linguistic matters, do you work with SABC? Is there a working relationship with SABC? I don't see a lot of exposure of sign language interpreters on TV to make access, broadcasting accessible to us. For example, you have the President's State of the Nation address. You have various briefings or you have various budgets that affect the lives of deaf people, obviously. Do you have any relationship with that institution, with SABC? Because you say you act as an advisory body on linguistic issues. So if you could just explain that, please. Let me just look at my notes here quickly. That's all. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and...
Chair, I beg your indulgence. I suspect that this may be... If she responds now, then you probably will close the session. So I would like to throw in a last question.
There are very urgent questions, I will allow
it. It is, you know, Chair, we have raised something that sets the alarm bells. You said there are only 7 accredited sign language interpreters in this country. And we've just discovered, myself and Honorable Max, through our own investigation, we're better than the Scorpions was, that 2 of those 7 are located in this very same room. And we know of a further one that's located in the prison precinct there, which means there are only 4 out there to service our whole country. This is a worrying fact, Chair, and to what an extent, this is the question, to what an extent is PANSAP aware of this and doing something? Because one would want to see that you have hundreds of students that are being trained as sign language interpreters, because we have a dire need. It's a skill that is so scarce. It's so valuable because of its scarcity that it feels that I must leave here and become a sign language interpreter to assist in this crisis that our country is facing. Change. So that is to me the question I wanted to ask, Chair. And I just want to also indicate that I know the Department of Health has a dedicated program or funding to train. To deploy sign language interpreters to all hospitals, and I think PANSAP must meet with the Department of Health to access that and have a kind of an agreement with them to train and get those people deployed to all hospitals in this country. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I just need to add to what you said about the accredited sign language interpreters, but I lost my thought. But I will come up with it later. Thank you. I'm giving over to Ms. Nkosi to answer those questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Member. If I may then respond to Honorable Mlalos' a comment. But there was first a question with regards to what happened to Inkandla School. Honorable Mdlalosa, you know that after the colleges of education were closed, the education of teachers became very specialized. You can only be trained at universities. I think that's what happened. I think honorable parliamentarians have to review that decision to close colleges of education. Seriously. Universities are not producing teachers, period, as much as teachers were produced by colleges of education. Yes, they may have been of poor quality, but you can actually add on that rather than having nothing. The education department is in a crisis insofar as educators are concerned in terms of the production of educators. I think as an educator myself, I feel very passionate about the way in which, you know, the country was robbed of teachers. That is one. Number two, coming to your comment, which is very, very good, Honorable Mhlalose, that we need to stop working in silos, which is why I'm excited that I see you in this portfolio committee and I saw you in another portfolio committee. I'm a very observant person. I just need you to start showing the country that collaboration works. You must not grill me in the arts and culture portfolio committee and then come here being nice, and you are very nice today. But she grilled me. But I'm saying, colleagues, we need to be very passionate about this country insofar as language is concerned. Language has taken a back seat for the past 14 years. Let us admit that. The issue that we are concerned about with housing, which was fair, housing and all the others, but language took a back seat. Can we then join hands and make languages a priority? And fight with PANSA to get better funding. Please, I'm really appealing to you. And I promise in the 5 years, if you can give me funding, you will see a big change. Already, in the first year that I've been involved with PANSA, we see things are spinning. Please, let us join hands, Honorable Mdlalose, and approach the ministers concerned. Let us get money. Let us not wait for next year. It's already 2 years gone. So if we can do that collaboration, it will definitely work. Rather than fighting each other on this and that, on minor issues, the big issue here, our children, the future of our constitution or of our democracy, let us actually work hand in hand. Thank you very much with that positive comment, Honorable Mdlalose. Honorable Ngaleka wanted to know about the rollover. Let me just then explain. With a slide. If you can see the Honorable Ngaleka, is that we have got that rollover. It was before all these other activities, because this was done in March, end of March. But these are the things that needed to be paid. And at the end, we had a deficit. So we were just saving that amount. Then all these activities had to be, those were the outstanding, that is commissioned money. So we ended up without anything. Thank you very much.
I think it would be very helpful to us if we are to be participating in requests for more funding to have a detailed financial statement of from PENSALB on exactly how the money has been spent, what percentage is on salaries, what percentage is on projects, workshops, all of that, because it gives us something substantial to work with. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Chamas, I can gladly give you that. This is what we have done. The information is there. This is what we presented before the Arts and Culture Portfolio. But that was not a brief for this meeting. I think that is those are two issues. I was just, you know, supporting my own point. But if you want, this is the what we have done. We have done it before the Portfolio Committee because they wanted it, the Arts and Culture Portfolio Committee. Thank you. If I then go to Honorable Madela's question, what stops PANSAL from assessing the 6.6 billion? I want to go back to the comment that was made by Honorable Mdlalose. Departments are very territorial. It's their money. We were invited by the Department of Education when this issue of 6.6 billion was discussed. You know what they told us? They said to us, we will give you English books and you will translate them into African languages. We're horrified. We were horrified. Why can't we have our own people write in their own languages, writing their stories and to their people? Why should we translate what is written in English? That was an, I don't know what to call it. It was an insult. That is the amount of territoriality that I'm talking about. We would want to have access to that money, but we can't because it's just ring fenced. It's the Department of Education, which is why we say we would like Parliament to give us money direct to PANSAL, not via other people, because people tend to do, they've got their own agendas. And we really, really would like Parliament to take the issue of budget for PANSAL seriously. Because it is not going to help me coming here and make these presentations and then you see there are gaps. We can only deliver because you are giving us sufficient budget. We have got structures, we've got systems, we've put everything in place, but we need to have the money to execute this task. Thank you. Honorable Madela also made a comment with regard to the Western Cape PLC. May I enlighten this House that the Western Cape Provincial Department of Arts and Culture has an act. There's an act that speaks to the formation of the PLC. The PLC in this province belongs to the department, which is going against PANSAL Act, which says we will form PLCs. While if the department has formed a PLC, it's supposed to, you know, cede it over to PANSAL. This has not happened. The Western Cape PLC has just worked exclusively as a structure of the department. These are some of the challenges that we meet with. And in terms of the representativity of the PLC, we have no control because it is the Provincial Department of Arts and Culture's prerogative to nominate. But in all our structures, we do have a representative for the deaf. For that matter, we even hire interpreters to interpret during the ordinary meetings of the PLC. That's how serious we are about the issues of the deaf. There was also the issue that was raised about PANSAL taking responsibility for accreditation. I'm happy to announce that the minister, our minister, the Honorable Dr. Paulo Jordan, in his speech on the 6th of, in his budget speech on the 6th of June, mentioned that the Language Practitioners Council is going to be established. That is where we will be very, very forceful in terms of implementation. MLS National Language Services and us, we are going to be working vigorously
to put things correct now that we will have a council. That was the stumbling block, the establishment of the language council, language practitioners council. You also indicated that you would like us to work with CETA to lobby with you. I would like to perhaps get the contact details of the people within the CETA so that we can actually take this forward. We would definitely would like to assist you there. You also indicated, Honorable Chair, that you are not happy with the Free State, especially what the report that you got from funders. I need to go back and get the facts. I'm not quite sure. I want to be very honest with you. All that we know that we have finished the project and we'll be launching the project, and we'll invite you to the launch so that you can view for yourself the quality of the work. And if there are any loopholes or gaps, we depend on you because you are the expert to indicate to us that that one is not good. We can then take it back for them to actually revisit and revamp the material. But all what we are happy about is that the project is finalized. We are going to be launching it. Worcester, being very white and the deaf not involved, and we are utilizing that unit. We can only work with an established structure. I'm sorry if it is that way. But we need to get the mandate from you to say to the Worcester unit, change, transform. You need to involve as many other people as possible. That is possible. But with the written mandate coming from this portfolio committee, honorable members of the portfolio committee, you must know that we regard you with the highest esteem. Whatever comes from you, whatever instruction we get from you, we take it seriously. So if you write to us that we must go to Worcester, and then when we go to we come to their door with their letter coming from you, we say, the portfolio committee says this, and therefore it must be done. We take you very seriously. You also wanted to know whether we do have the resolution that was taken on the official status of the sign language. I'm afraid I don't have knowledge of that resolution, parliamentary resolution, but I do know that the minister has worked on it. I mean, he has access to it. That's why he pronounced on the 6th of June that I was not very clear about his stance, but it was as if not for now. But I think we need to actually have access to that resolution and perhaps revisit this issue as a collective when we make a collective presentation to the minister. You also asked, Honorable Chairperson, whether we do have any access or to SABC, do work with SABC. In between October and December 2007, we worked with SABC or to assist them with the subtitling. We started a project and we were going to get into phase two of that subtitling project with SABC. Unfortunately, there were some hiccups. We have not actually moved forward. But yes, we do have a relationship with SABC because we are concerned about the quality of sign language, the quality of subtitling. So that is why we said we'll start the subtitling training and then move to the second level or advanced level with SABC, because we want to improve quality. We are doing this, Honorable Chairperson and members, because we do not have our enforcement powers yet. We are now preparing for that, so that when we have our enforcement, all those who are actually violating the language rights, even in terms of use, will be punished. But for now, we are just
supporting and developing. Honorable Mandela made a comment that of the 7 accredited as a interpreters, as sign language interpreters, there are actually 4 in the whole country. And how can we perhaps do something about this? And thank you very much for making us aware that there's money allocated to the Department of Health for the training of sign language interpreters within hospitals. And it is true. The training that we did was just an awareness so that people can go on. We do not have the money. If we had the money, we'd have as many sign language interpreters trained. But I'm happy that you have indicated to us that there is money within the Department of Health. We will approach them and say, please give us that money. We will actually facilitate training better than you are doing. And we will monitor that good quality interpreters come out of the system, because this is what we are worried about. It is important that we get quality interpreters. You alluded to the fact that people get to jail because of wrong interpreting, not only for sign language, even for the indigenous languages. It is a serious issue. It is a serious issue, Honorable Chair, and I'm happy that you are as passionate about this issue as I am. This is why we are saying we need the money, we need our enforcement power so that this thing is corrected. I disagree with the Honorable Mdlalose that we must educate. We have educated, but now I think it's about enforcement. 14 years down the line, the UNESCO principle which says a right delayed is a right denied. We cannot deny our people for the next 14 years. 14 years was for everybody to put their house in order, but now we need to actually to enforce. We have had multilingualism campaigns, you know, all those functions. We were awakening people. We are saying be aware of these issues, but now we will be enforcing. And it will start here in Parliament. I won't be speaking in English, I'll be speaking in my mother tongue. And I'll be expecting interpreters to interpret for me. Because this is not even correct that I'm breaking the king's and the queen's language, because it's not my first language, it's my second language. So I will break it. You are very lucky that you can understand what I'm saying. But sometimes I sleep because I'm thinking in my mother tongue. So it is very, very important that you also accord me the right here in Parliament to speak in my language, which I'm very, very fluent in. Okay. Chair, that's the end of my response to the second phase of questions. I thank you.
Honourable members, are there any burning questions or comments before we close this part of the session of today? Honourable Moss?
No, no, sir. I just wanted to know, I think I have two questions. The one was the Worcester project, where you looked at funding trainers, what progress did you make there? Is there anything substantive that came from there? And also, the training that you give to hospitals and CDWs, how effective is it? Would people be able to, and how long does it take for them to make any meaning difference in the life of the deaf?
Thank you, Honorable Moss.
Sorry, Mr. Nkosi, just one question from Dalku.
No, I still want to go back to PANSAL being a Chapter 9 institution with all the authority and a way to plan their work so that it is effective to PANSAL. Much as us as portfolio committee, we say we assist, we try to make things work, but the full responsibility still lies within PANSAL. So I think if PANSAL would just need to have her house in order, really, I think we need to look into that. Thank you.
You?
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
You are quite right, Honorable Moss. The initial interaction or initial training is not sufficient. We were just saying, please go on. It can never be considered that it is then a full-scale training. It was just to indicate that this needs to be done. You also rightfully pointed out that the hospital was just an awareness. We do not have sufficient muscle in terms of the budget to take people to respected institutions where this can be facilitated. So this is one of the areas that PANSAL committed itself on the 21st of February, that we'll have bursaries to fund, you know, these initiatives so that there will be long-term training. The Honorable Chair indicated that it takes 4 years to have a fully-fledged interpreter. We want to actually raise the standards. It's just the money. We need to have your support. Honorable Mjalose, it's true. We take our responsibility very serious, and we'll never shirk our responsibility. But it is also your responsibility to make sure that we get the money. And we are a parliamentary structure. We need money from you. You need to give us money. And please don't make our money go sideways, and then it must come straight to us, and we will account for it. Please assist us with the National Treasury to give us money, because the money in the National Treasury would say to us when we approach them, because we made a submission to them. They said, it's the Minister of Arts and Culture. Minister of Arts and Culture, come the day of the budget speech, were not even mentioned. We feel very, very hurt about that. Please help us get the money. Parliament, help us get the money. Thank you.
Okay, honourable members, on behalf of this committee, thank you to PANSALP, to the Ms. Nkosi, the Chief Executive Officer of PANSALP. Thank you for, and we see that there are many challenges, and the result of that is because you do not have funds to do that, and then we will then, as soon as we receive your financial budget, and then we will ask the Minister to see if he can address those gaps, and especially for those deaf people to continue with the sense that they can be actively involved in the society. They have been marginalized for many years, and we want to prevent that from happening. So thank you for your presentation. And we will definitely be hoping seeing you again, that we can get an update on what's been happening with PANSALP. And then we welcome all those launches that you talked about and alluded to. So thank you for your presentation. I believe your first board just met, and we want to applaud your new board. And please, on behalf of this committee, please relay that to them, and we wish them good luck with their work, and then maybe in future they will also come to our committee and then to address you as well. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And Honorable
We have the, I'm sorry. Yes. Do you want to say something?
I was wanted to thank you again for the opportunity you have accorded me to make this presentation, and also the passion that you have around your language. And if we can just hold hands and approach those with the kitty, the money, it will make all the difference. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Honourable members, we have the SABC here. The delegates are here. We're asking for a five-minute break. We have some fresh tea and coffee. And after the break, we will continue with the SABC's presentation. Thank you.
They are more informed, and they will be making presentations in different areas. All of us will be presenting in the different areas, of course. And with me, a member of the board as well, I have Fadila Lakhadin, Ms. Fadila Lakhadin, who's based here in Cape Town. she is the chairperson of the Human Resources Committee of the board, and that's why, and she drives most of the areas that we're presenting on today. So she will speak into the strategy and the policy that has been adopted by the board broadly in the areas of disability. So she will speak on that, on what the board has done. In the management team, I have Phil Muilwa, who is a manager in regulatory affairs. So he will speak about what regulations we have from ICASA, and what the license conditions of the SABC say about sign language. He will speak on those legal and regulatory areas. Ms. Jackie Songwane is the head of content reversioning, and he will explain more of what that means and what her department or her division does. She will talk also about a brief research that she is in the process of concluding, and how SABC implements the various areas of policy. With her as well, we have Ms. Bessie Tugwana, who is the general manager for SABC 2, but today she'll be wearing a, because she's representing her boss. She'll be talking on behalf of all the platforms, that is the television channels, the three television channels that we have, and the number of radio stations that we have. So she will be talking about implementation as well. But most importantly, Bessie will be talking about the future under the digital environment, what SABC is planning. And then I will summarize, I will conclude and just indicate what we have, and I know there'll be questions on implementation, there'll be questions on budget, so I will speak briefly when I summarize into those particular areas. Thank you, Chair.
Do you need assistance at the... Yes, committee clerk, please. See if you can get assistance, please. All right. We'll get people from the IT to assist you. Honorable members also do have the presentations in front of them, and so until the IT, until the technician come, I think proceed with your presentation, and once they come, we can then just, you know, slot in with that slide. So over to you. Thank you.
Okay. Specifically, the slide that we wanted to show on the board, on the presentation, is the one that speaks specifically into the corporate goals of the SABC. But we can revert that back to that later, so it will not affect the presentation setup. So we can go ahead. Just to say, Chairperson, the SABC welcomes the opportunity to brief the Joint Monitoring Committee about the use of sign language in its broadcasting services. And I should add that as a board, we have been concerned and we've taken a number of policy decisions to ensure that there is progress on this area. We know that we may not be up to scratch in as far as sign language is concerned. And one of the most important events I remember late last year was when the presidential address was on television and there was no sign language, and that was a serious oversight that we saw at that time, and we thought it is important that we make interventions in those areas because there's no consistency. I think I must say that up front, even in the news bulletins, there's no consistency in the manner in which we use sign language. But Jackie will talk mostly about that particular area. The SABC, as members, honourable members of the committee will know that it is organised into two operational divisions as set out in the Broadcasting Act of 1999. We have the Public Broadcasting Services, which is the bulk of SABC, with I think about 14 or 12 radio stations and two television channels. And we have a smaller Public Commercial Services, which in the Act, it is meant to generate revenue for SABC. So there's one television channel. There may be more under the digital environment, but currently there's only one television channel and three commercial radio stations, some of which are regional stations. The Public Service Division is comprised of 15 radio stations, that correction, I said 14, it's 15 radio stations and two full-spectrum multilingual television channels. The Commercial Division, as I said, is comprised of three radio stations and one licensed television channel and one satellite television service, which is SABC Africa. What informs the presentation today is the vision of the SABC, which is Broadcasting for Total Citizenship and Empowerment. And out of that, we have developed a number of corporate goals that inform the work that we do. And the corporate goals are integrated into everything that SABC does. They affect a number of areas, the people, they affect technology, they affect the financial health of the organization. They affect quite a number of areas. But then also there are certain values that define the way we do things at SABC. There are three broad values. This is conversations and partnerships. It's building a common future, and it's restoring human dignity. These values are embedded in everything that we do at SABC. And then we have the five strategic pillars: people, operations, funding, technology, governance. And these strategic pillars really are distributed, divided into clusters. So everything, every division falls into one of these particular clusters. In the people cluster, you'll find everything that that has to do with people inside and outside of the SABC. There's a cluster that particularly looks after those areas. Operations is about everything that we do in terms of broadcasting at SABC. So everything that has to do with content and distribution of content falls under this particular area. And I think the others are self-explanatory as well. And just broadly, the framework that we operate under is regulated by the ICASA regulations reflected in the Code of Good Practice. And this was adopted, even though the discussions around the Code of Good Practice was started much earlier, I think around 2005, 2006. It was eventually adopted in 2007. And the SABC, as well as other broadcasters in the country, are signatories to the Code of Good Practice. And then we're also governed by the license conditions, the editorial policies of the SABC, the policy and strategy adopted by the board late last year. And as I indicated, I will now hand over to Phil Moilwa, who is the manager in regulatory affairs, just to take you through the various aspects of the regulatory framework that you operate under. Thank you, Chair.
Am I audible now? Thank you. Okay, I was saying thanks for the opportunity. I come from the regulatory environment, and as the chairperson has indicated, I'll just be giving a broad regulatory framework in terms of how the SABC is regulated with regard to issues on disability, and in particular also sign language. We find it important that we need to get a framework as to, you know, within what space is the SABC operating, what guides the SABC in terms of how it should deliver with regard to disability and sign language. The process started, as the chairperson has indicated, you know, by interacting with ICASA in developing a regulatory framework. Members of the public interested parties were invited to make submissions, which led to a code of good practice, which was actually developed in 2006. That code required the commitment from members of the industry to actually sign, and the SABC was one of the signatories to the Code of Good Practice as it was developed then. The code came through a very extensive consultative and representative process. Various bodies were there that sought to encourage rather than prescribe measures to be taken by broadcasters in catering for people with disabilities. Just on this point, it was found that, you know, it's not about coercing, it's about the willingness. The members of the industry must become proactive, and that is why the code was seeking to encourage rather than to prescribe. In November 2007, the code was revised when ICASA further published regulations providing a code for the communications industry on people with disabilities as required by the Electronic Communications Act. The ECA required ICASA to come with regulations, hence the code that was adopted in 2006 had to be revised. That code came in effective in November 2007. Over and above that, the SABC had license conditions which were issued in 2005 by ICASA that prescribed that the channels should provide sign language and that all services, radio and television, should cater for people with disabilities. So that condition is then the license condition. The code and the license conditions require that the SABC reports further to ICASA annually on how it provides for people with disabilities. Furthermore, our editorial policies also caters for people with disabilities. It specifically, even on language, says that we need to integrate sign language in terms of our languages of broadcast. To be specific, coming to the code on people with disabilities that was issued in 2007, it is important just to look at some of the key points that were actually raised in that code for people with disabilities. The code provides for basic standards and options for improving accessibility, such as improving and or increasing subtitles and sign language. Furthermore, broadcasters are required to ensure that the broadcasting content does not stereotype people with disabilities by, amongst others, consulting with organizations that represent people with disabilities. It is quite very clear that whatever that we do has to be in consultation with people with disabilities. Involve people with disabilities in the sourcing of content, as we are a content-driven organization, with regard to generation of ideas and involving them in the studio operations. The code was very clear in stating those things. Furthermore, with regard to the code again, the broadcasters, together with other industry players, are required to report to ICASA annually on the progress that is made regarding the implementation of the code itself. The license conditions, if one has to be specific on what the license conditions are saying, the license conditions provide that, you know, reasonable provision is made to sign language translation to be provided during news bulletins transmitted in prime time and during other program genres broadcast throughout the broadcast period. The license conditions further say people with disabilities must regularly feature and participate in the program material in accordance with the Integrated National Disability Strategy. So generally, this is the framework within which, as the broadcaster, we're operating in. I'll hand that to you, Chair.
Thank you. Jackie Songwane, who is the GM in the content area, will talk briefly about the research that SAPC has conducted and how that research is currently being used on the implementation side of the current strategy of the SAPC. Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, I'm also very excited to be here to be able to address you on a very important issue. As the chairperson of the SABC board has mentioned that we are about to conclude an extensive study that we started last year that is particularly looking at audiovisual translation strategies and with particular focus in subtitling, South African Sign Language, dubbing and audio description. I am coming from the SABC, from the unit called Content Enterprises, and I head a small unit called Reversioning and Repurposing. And basically what we are responsible for there is to make different versions of programming that is coming from the SABC. So, for example, you know, we're responsible for the subtitled versions on our SOAPs. South African Sign Language would also fall under us as well as dubbing, mainly in animation for children's program. And we are also exploring audio description, which will allow blind viewers to also enjoy our programs. So we're very, very excited about the study and some of the recommendations that have are emerging. And we are hoping that out of the study, we'll really now be able to form proper policy and targets and quotas, because now we will have full understanding of what audiences are wanting, especially people with disabilities, what their tastes are, what their preferences are, and really tailor-make our program towards them. When Sisbesi speaks, she will speak about DTT, because that's really where I think the SABC will be able to fully embrace the issues of disability, because technology will allow us to provide programming to different audiences where blind viewers can choose on their decoder that they want the audio described version, or deaf people will be able to choose the, you know, the signed version. At the moment, we are having challenges in terms of the fact that we are on analog, and therefore we are restricted in terms of what we can do. So in terms of some of the research findings that are coming out, we really took time to speak to the different people with disabilities and sectors to really try and find out what kind of programming they're looking for, what it is at the moment about the SABC that they actually can't fully consume our product. And we had focus groups which were around the country, and it was also a practical study in that we made the different versions. So, for example, we had a focus group which watched a program with a sign interpreter, and we asked them questions about how they felt. Was the size of the person big enough? Could they understand the language and things like that? So it was a very practical study. We wanted it to be practical because we wanted to speak to the people who would be the consumers of our product. So in terms of the disability community, we started with deaf people, and we looked at some of the statistics just to really understand, you know, how many people we are talking about. And that was a very difficult exercise because depending on who you spoke to, we got different numbers. But in terms of statistics, South Africa in 2001, there's an estimation that there are around 313,585 profoundly deaf people and approximately 1,237,264 extremely hard of hearing people in South Africa. And according to Deaf Surveyor figures, they put it up to 3.5% of the South African population. And I guess that number will never be a solid number because, you know, it's a disability. Some people that hear, you know, have accidents, and as you get old, we know that your hearing also goes. So it's not really important about the number. It's really more about the access and whether people can consume our products. We also did some analysis in terms of our blind viewers, and Statistics South Africa estimates that there are 600,000 blind people in South Africa, 80% of them who live in rural areas. It's also further estimated that 40% of these people is blind and rest partially sighted. And according to the South African National Council for the Blind, they feel the figure is around 2.5 million of our people. Then we looked at current approaches towards subtitling and sign language and how we have done it at SABC so far. And subtitling does seem to be the best tool for increasing access to television, even for our deaf viewers, because there's an issue around South African Sign Language that yes, it is a language, but depending where you are in the country, there are different dialects. So sometimes, you know, a sign that is used maybe for a house in Limpopo will maybe a different sign in KwaZulu-Natal. So those dialects are there. And there's nothing wrong with that because there's dialects even in our own languages, in Zulu or Sotho, depending where you come from. People speak slightly differently or use different words. So subtitling seems to be, you know, the preferred tool in terms of access. But, of course, we are talking about, you know, deaf people that have been educated in largely in English or Afrikaans, which leaves a huge chunk of deaf people who are illiterate, who don't understand English, and what happens with them, and who have come up with their own way of speaking in terms of sign language, which may not be the official South African Sign Language. Since the inception of SABC Content Enterprises, the amount of subtitle programs have increased dramatically over the past 3 years across all three TV channels, particularly in the public service channels SABC 1 and 2. On prime time in the last 3 years, there has been an increase of around 50% of programs with subtitles, mainly in drama, entertainment, and factual. But I do need to say that most of these subtitles have been in English, wall to wall. We've just did an experiment early last year where we started to subtitle in African languages, which was interesting and was welcomed by viewers, but also has its disadvantages as well. During this time, the SABC has also managed to build a culture in which viewers have gotten used to subtitles as a means of accessing programs for deaf people, as well as for viewers who speak different indigenous languages. I think in South Africa, we're in a unique position because we have 11 official languages. So, you know, subtitling not only just caters, obviously, for deaf people in terms of access, but also for language, other language speakers. So, for example, we've got Mubango on SABC2, which is largely a Venda Sesotho soapy, but it's enjoyed by a lot of viewers who don't understand those languages because it's being subtitled. And that's the power of it, and we are hoping that we'll be able to do more going forward. The SABC also provides interlingual and intralingual subtitles. These are technical terms, but I think it's important to kind of explain the difference. When we talk about interlingual translation, we refer to translation of the dialogue from one language into another in order to make film and television programs accessible to speakers of the target language. So, so basically there we're saying that the languages are different. So maybe the source language the actors are speaking in Zulu, in interlingual translation, the subtitles will be in another language. At the moment, it's mostly in English. And then we've got what we call intralingual translation, in which the subtitles are in the same language as what the actors are speaking in. But particularly for deaf people, we also add other things like sound effects, so that you know if there's someone knocking at the door or you know if the phone is ringing, because if you don't have those cues, then you kind of miss out. You know, there's kind of like a jump in the narrative and you're not able to fully understand what's happening. So we've done that mostly in our main soapies here in Dalan and Mubango, which has worked really well. And in the study, those were the two soapies that come up tops in terms of, you know, deaf people feeling that they really enjoy, they can watch because everything is there and they don't have to fill in gaps for themselves and be frustrated. Well, we did the study because, you know, we realized that we really didn't have any guidelines with regards to subtitling. We basically had left it up to the producers to kind of do it, and of course, it kind of compromised the quality of the subtitles. So my unit is specifically tasked in a quality assurance and standardizing our subtitles. Oh, load shedding.
You need to put on the light, please.
Can I continue? Yes, can I? Okay. So we really have to standardize our subtitles because, you know, some are too big, some are too small, some are too fast, some it's too many words to read, it's different colors, all of that stuff. We really need to standardize so that, you know, we have subtitles that are quality, that people have time to read and be able to enjoy the program, because there's nothing worse than trying to follow a story, but, you know, you can hardly even read what's there. The next subtitle is on. You know, you will switch off and go on to the next program. In terms of sign language, the SABC channel broadcasts events of national importance, such as parliamentary events in South African Sign Language. It's 2 years running now that the opening of Parliament, the President's speech in the opening of Parliament that we've subtitled the very next day. I mean, obviously, first prize would be to do it, you know, instantly, immediately. But as the president speaks on a Friday, on, you know, midday, we are ready with the subtitle version so that deaf people can also, you know, understand what what the president has said. And the SABC has to do more of that in terms of national events and because, you know, it's about access, you know, and this thing of delaying even the next day is it's still not good enough. It should really be simultaneous in it at the same time. Until recently, television channels provided signage for news bulletins as an interim measure to the discussion held as described below. Those were the 5:30 news bulletin as well as the 20:30 bulletin on SABC 3. That has since stopped because DEFSA was quite vocal in the quality of the interpreters of those bulletins. They felt that they were not qualified and, you know, they were just not happy with the quality. So the SABC is in discussion with DEFSA to try and find the qualified interpreters. And we were here earlier this morning when PANSELP was presenting, and it is a challenge. The skills shortage in this area is a challenge, and the problem is further exacerbated by the number of languages that we have. Whether, you know, will somebody in Limpopo understand signing in Zulu? Because of those dialects, we do understand that South African Sign Language is a language on its own. But to give you an example, like within the Ndebele bulletin, some of the interpreters that were used there didn't even understand the language and Ndebele. They were given the English script and kind of, you know, and it becomes evident and obvious to the viewers who understand Ndebele that there's something wrong. So there's a lot of work that needs to happen in terms of skills development in this area. Otherwise, I think we're going to come back year on year with this frustration. So that's what's happening. So, not too long, we will have the signed bulletins back on air. But there is a collaboration with DEFSA to fix that. South African Sign Language is mostly accessible to the educated and the literate deaf people, as I said earlier. And as a result, some of the uneducated and illiterate deaf people create their own colloquial language, which is not always reflected on our television screens. The quality and standards, some of the groups comprising of deaf people feel the quality of South African Sign Language is poor. That the broadcasting industry needs agreed standards and practices, that they need engagement with hearing impaired people across different race groups. The skills and capacity to produce content, I mean, this is also critical. Again, you know, it's, you know, for as long as we look at the issues of disability as a mandate issue, I think it's kind of the wrong approach. We need to embrace everybody in this country, and then, you know, everybody that works in terms of language or sign language or subtitling is doing it because they understand that we are doing it for everybody in this country. It shouldn't be seen as a must-do, you know, kind of thing. So there's a lot of education around just sensitizing people and making people aware. I'm sorry. Swapping laptop. Okay. And also that also speaks to having people with disability as part of the production of content. Because if we have more and more of that, you know, the sensitization will be quicker, but we will then ensure that we are making programs for everybody. Most deaf people are currently educated in English within hearing impaired learning institutions and are unable to read subtitles in an African language. And that's what I was alluding to, that although we did the exercise, you know, if we do subtitles in Siswati in an analog environment, it only really means that the people who understand Siswati can enjoy the program. With deaf people, if they're not being taught in their own languages, you know, they're not going to be understanding those subtitles necessarily in those languages. Partial subtitling is perceived as discriminating against deaf viewers as it only subtitles the dialogue in African languages. What we mean by that, some of you who watch Generations, you will see that Generations is only partially subtitled. It only subtitles the bits that are in African languages, and when the actors speak in English, then it's not subtitled. Now, well, that's terribly frustrating for a deaf person to follow the narrative of that story. But also, you know, what are we saying about that? Who is Generations made for? You know, it really should be wall-to-wall subtitled so that everybody can enjoy it. So we are looking at fixing all of those things. As we said, there's a lot of inconsistencies within the way that we are working at the moment. So that is acknowledged, and that is something that we're very serious about fixing. In terms of ICASA, it's important to note that in terms of the ICASA regulations, subtitling is not credited, it's not counted as another language in terms of the license conditions. I think that poses a problem because, you know, subtitles have a budget implications, and they do increase access. More people can enjoy the program, especially people with disabilities. And the fact that ICASA is not recognizing that, I think it's something that perhaps we may need your assistance in trying to lobby that it does, because in the DTT environment, I foresee that there will be a dramatic increase in subtitles in terms of access and mandate. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Bessie, I think what Jackie has done is just indicate what currently happens in the analog environment. Bessie will talk about the future possibilities with more channels and with the improved technical environment. So I'll hand over to Bessie. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, and like my other colleagues, we appreciate the opportunity to engage with you. We don't see it as a one-way engagement. We're also hoping that we will get guidance and support where necessary. DTT, SABC is very excited about this possibility because, as you have heard, JT, there are frustrations and some of the gaps or where we seem not to be accommodating disabled communities or those of hard of hearing. It's not because we don't want to. It's because the technology that we're using now, the analog technology, has challenges. In DTT, we are going to be able to have more than the three channels that we have, or plus one, which is a satellite channel. We are also going to be able to have a technology that's going to enable our viewers to access the text part of our programming, which will come completely text, as well as audio streaming. In other words, you would be able to view a program in one language, like in English, but also be able to surf for a language of your preference. So in that way, we believe that we will be able to realize our vision, that of total citizen empowerment, because we'll be able to reach as many people as we should as a public broadcaster. We also believe that the current editorial policy that we have will need to be revised because it was done in view of the analog environment. We will be driving it vigorously as well, and we also believe that, which Jackie also talked to extensively, that the closed captioning, I think as I have mentioned, is we will be able to get the opportunity of the text version. So enclosed captioning is not going to be so much of a problem in that environment. We also, there's a possibility of the electronic guide. Those of us who watch at DSTV will know that through the electronic guide, you are able to surf and you are able to get other versions. Like I think currently what DSTV is using is using it to control or also inform you in terms of whether it should be something that can be watched by children or not, and if not, you are able to control it and stop so that your children can't access it. And we will also be able to subtitle other genres. As Jackie has pointed out, we currently are concentrating on soapies and some dramas and some current affairs, but it's not all our programs. In the DTT environment, we'll be able to do all the programs, depending, of course, on budget. We also will be able to work with radio, as Jackie has also pointed out, is that radio is currently able through their drummers to enable the visually impaired to follow a story, whereas with television we currently aren't doing. I think we have done a pilot with two soapies, Mubango and Seven the Land, and both of them are on my channel. The concern, I think it was raised during the PENSAP presentation, around how we are making events of national importance accessible to all South Africans by not signing them or subtitling them, is something that is a major concern for us. We are in fact working on that, and we should be able to implement it before the end of this year. Because fortunately, those events of national importance are in my channel as well. So we are close to finalizing that project. I won't talk too much on audio description because JK has touched and elaborated on it a great deal, but we'll be taking questions if there is still need to elaborate on it. The research that Jackie touched on, I also want to elaborate on it, but just to say, for us it's important because it's going to inform our editorial policy and how, when we have more opportunities through the many channels that we are going to have, as well as the opportunities through audio streaming and text, how we are going to be able to realize the nothing about me without me. And we believe with that feedback, we'll be able to broadcast or make programs that not only are about catering for the disabled people, but that will integrate us as a society, as a nation that is one, rather than separating us. I think I've spoken to this point, so I'm not going to elaborate on it. Safe to say, we are very excited about the possibilities that DTT offers SABC and in the main, the nation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry that you have to go through so many presentations, but Fadila will talk into the strategy that we adopted towards the end of last year, the SABC, and the attempts that we are making at making sure that the strategy is financed. And I would appreciate if members of the committee would understand that this is a new area for us as the SABC, and therefore financing and deciding and even how much to fund for a particular area is a big challenge for us. So we are learning in this area. We don't have full funding for the strategy that we adopted, but I think slowly we're trying to integrate it into everything that we do. And just into the cycles of the SABC, because we discuss a strategy in December, and then we start the budgeting cycle in January, February. So some of the areas will have been left out of the process until the next financial year. So it's a slow process. It's taking long. But I will explain that after Fadila presents the strategy that we have currently. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair of the committee and members of the committee. I, as you've heard, I'm chair of the HR subcommittee of the board. And as such, I need to drive these kinds of things with regards to not just disability, but general access, both for internal stakeholders and external stakeholders of the SABC, and disability then becomes one of those. Only last year, late last year, did we adopt a disability strategy, which now informs everything that Jackie and Bessie and the mandate speaks to and what ICASA has been saying. In a sense, all of those things were ahead of the SABC. With results, Jackie and her division were doing things as they felt necessary and compelled to do just at the time with no strategy. Now going forward, there is a strategy which will now inform in a very systematic manner the way these access issues are implemented within the SABC's offering to the public, and also, as I said, its internal stakeholders, because we also have employees who are disabled, or we endeavor to have more than what we currently have employed within the SABC. The strategy that was developed is couched within the vision and the mission, the organizational values, the corporate goals, and the philosophy of the SABC. What currently, as Siskanye said, because the strategy was developed or was adopted late last year, there still needs to be budgets for some of the things that needs to be developed, some of these strategies. But big on the agenda that we see across the platforms is an endeavor to implement sign language. And Jackie has spoken extensively about those issues. Some of what I know, just without having spoken to Jackie and them, is that there's a new part of the building, because for a long time, as you know, this is my second term on the board, there was no toilet accessible to me on the floors that I work. But now there's a new part of the building, and the whole building is undergoing reconstruction. And part of that is physical access for both, as I said again, internal and external stakeholders. That is besides the program offering. The program offering, we talk specifically around access for deaf people and for blind people or partially sighted and hard of hearing people, which is what Jackie and Bessie both talked about in terms of the audio streaming, the subtitling, the sign language, and so forth. And then we've got the physical access. What is currently happening within the SABC is that the one part of, and I think that's the beginning anyway of any disability strategy, is the sensitization of stakeholders. And those, I am informed, have they've started with sensitization now. You will appreciate that the SABC is a large organization. It has regions as well, but I'm aware that it has started within the national divisions already. I'm also informed that they want to start something called, they are exploring currently the possibility of job rotation of for disabled people, and that I understand it to be where it's for skills development, because different people will be placed in different types of jobs to gain different skills within different areas, and also
I think part of that will follow is that one would pick up in a particular job what the access needs would be for a particular disability within that job. And this is what I think the exploration of job rotation is about. Obviously, where we're still looking for budgets, what we're trying to do or are doing is using our own platform for disability awareness. We've got an intranet, which is an internal medium, and then we've got the radio and the TV platforms. And I must admit myself, there isn't enough on all of those platforms with regards to disability. But going forward, one hopes that will change. And I think the biggest issue is the budget that I think needs to be dedicated to a disability strategy, because when you go through what the SABC has to do with regards to integration of disabled people, both internal stakeholders and external stakeholders, it's going to take a lot of money. And as those of us who are disabled around this table knows, that you cannot talk about integration without talking about budgets. And that will happen to a larger extent in the next budget cycle.
Thank you, Chair. That is really the bulk of our presentation today. And in conclusion, I think I just want to add a particular area of focus, especially in the allocation of resources. And as members would know that SABC doesn't produce its own programs. We work with the external stakeholders, we have producers, but also related to that, we have a huge industry development program. And one of the areas that we want to make sure that we have resources for is for people with different disabilities who want to produce programs for the SABC, which is where we can interact and make sure that the content, even though we may not have direct influence, but we make a contribution to ensure that people with different disabilities can produce their own programs and thus improve the quality of programs for different access on the platforms of the SABC. So that's one of the areas that we're working with. We are in the process of developing an industry charter that will look particularly in this area as well. And we hope, as Beth has indicated, that digitization will change everything for us, will give us more access, will enable different viewers and listeners to control their own viewing patterns and their own preferences in terms of access to our programs. And that is how far we have gone as the SABC, and I'd like to thank you, Chairperson, and members of the committee, for the opportunity again to come and present on this matter. And I think I must point out that the ability, you know, just by being here, it enables us to see the gaps that may be identified in this presentation today, and the amount of work that we still have to do as the SABC. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you to the SABC for your presentation. And I think it was a quite in-depth presentation. I sat on the Portfolio Committee of Communications in 2004, and I think that was my last time, and I sat. And it's not quite nice to hear what has been happening since then. And it seems like a lot of things has been happening since then. Honourable Mandela, your hand is up, and Honourable Moss. Sorry, the interpreter smoke. Honourable Mandela. Mandela. Sorry, the interpreter's mistake. Honourable Galeka, you said you would like to leave early. I think if there's some urgent question that you want to ask now before you leave, I think we'll give you the floor first then. So, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The chairperson of the board, in opening, she said that
there is no consistency in what you are doing in regard to the sign language. I'd like to know why is there no consistency. Secondly, although there was a lot of explanation about this subtitling of the main events like the State of the Nation address, I'd like to know why do you only subtitle afterwards? Why can't you do it simultaneously? Because you don't have the speech in advance of what? Why can't you do it simultaneously while the president is speaking? If it is an issue of you not having his speech, maybe that can be arranged. I don't know. Then you mentioned something about job rotation when in regard to people with disability. Is the aim of this job rotation only to multi-skill, or is there another reason? Secondly, how far have you came? Are you, as the SABC, do you have the 2% of people with disability working in your organization? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Member. Go ahead, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I also want to express our appreciation for this excellent presentation that the SABC team have presented to us today. I'd like to start with the negative, Chair. You know, we have been inundated, departments coming, entities coming, and present us very, very nice strategies on disability. And then qualify that to say, we have it on paper, but we don't have the money, the resources to implement what we are committed to do. Now, Chair, as a disabled person, I find it unacceptable that we are able to plan for everything, but when it comes to impacting positively or making a change in the lives of disabled people, then we always throw the excuse that we do not have the money to do that. You see, to me that is not acceptable. The SABC has a mandate, very, very clear, and that mandate does not exclude disabled people. I think the SABC must go back and find the necessary resources to fund what they intend to do on paper, and not tell us we're going to provide for it in the next budget. The mere fact that we only started developing a strategy in December is a serious indictment on your part. You see, because the SABC, I know this is a new board, but the SABC as an entity, as an organization, did not came into life last year. Chair. This public mandate that I have was not given to them last year. The CASA code, indeed, that you subscribe to clearly points to these issues. Chair. So I must say I'm starting off negatively because it's a matter very, very close to my heart, and I see you are repeating what all the other departments and government entities are doing, you see, and certainly would want to see a change. We also speak about the issue of changing partial subtitling because it inherently discriminates against deaf viewers, and one is happy about that, but there's no indication of by when this will be sorted. What is the time frame in relation to that? You have mentioned the issue of generation. I think Isidingo is exactly the same. There are only subtitling when an African language are spoken. But I also want to contest this issue of African language because There are people who argue that Afrikaans is also an African language, a language developed in this continent of us, let's say. I also want to, you know, I'm concerned with the whole issue of job rotation. You know, normally when job rotation comes into the equation, it is to afford people a break from a monotonous kind of job that has been that this person has been doing, to expose him to other areas. But it also has inherent deficiencies. You know, when employers use job rotation, it's normally an intention, and I hope that's not the case, to downgrade conditions of service. And I'm talking from a trade union perspective, because I spent most of my life fighting these kinds of things happening on the factory floor. I would rather want to opt for job enrichment. You see, I don't know why that isn't, as a strategy, are not being considered. Because as I said, job rotation, you have a clear job description. You are a, you wanna, I don't know what kind of a job specialties exist within the SABC, but you are contracted. Your job description say for you, it's A. Now you're going to B. A B would indicate it's a lesser job. Now it may impact on your remuneration that you receive, etc. You see, so clearly. This is, and I can't speak for the unions also within the SABC, but I think the unions have to look very, very carefully at that so that it does not impact negatively on its members, say. Yes, Comrade Elizabeth, I have raised the issue of the simultaneous subtitling, and especially at the State of the Nation addresses, etc. And I agree with that. I wanted to suggest that perhaps you should, if the text is a problem, then certainly, I mean, the text, the speech in the text form, then I'm quite sure that the presidency would be quite willing, of course, under strict conditions, make that available for you to indeed ensure that all viewers are able to hear simultaneously what the president wants to say to us. Yes, Chair, let me at this point in time stop there. Thank you.
Honourable member, what?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to also add my appreciation to your presentation to us. We've heard over the last couple of weeks, months, SADC has been here for all the wrong reasons, but I think your visit here is for a very good reason. And I also want to say to my comrade next to me, I don't think you started off negatively. I think you started off with what should happen. Definitely not negative. Because disabled persons should not always be at the back, you know, the last persons to be accommodated. Chairperson, I want to start off by just adding on what Elizabeth was saying, the consistency. You know, these people from Somalia, they would sell cigarettes every day, hot, raining, every day. And consistency is so important, because you would know, you will find that thing. Now, if on the SABC, there's not always subtitles, there's not always sign language, you sometimes doubt. It's like I'm speaking to you in a language you don't understand. Imagine you listen to the news in on Isivenda. If you don't understand the language, you would not know what's happening. Maybe you would see some of the graphics and maybe understand what they are trying to say. But you don't understand. To me, consistency is very important in that regard. And I think you need to work towards consistency. That, to me, is very important. Because with consistency comes reliability. Chairperson, on the point of subtitles, what's it, sign language, what's it, captions, subtitles. As a black South African, I don't know all the black indigenous languages. So subtitles is not only for those who can't speak, it's not only for the deaf. It's also for those who want to learn languages. Because obviously your job would be to educate, to inform, and to... So the subtitles to me is important, not only for disabled persons, but because it's a more multi-function, and I think you should encourage them to ensure that one have more subtitles. Elizabeth raised the matter on did you manage to reach the 2%? I would want to add on by asking what is the position? Is it senior position? I don't want to hear you saying yes, we've reached the 2%. We also want to know, you know. For example, Fadila is sitting there. She's not on the board simply because she's disabled. The disabled community put her on the board to make sure that she would see that the issues for persons with disabilities is accommodated. Now, issues for disabled is not only people who are blind. I mean, it's not only the deaf. Why does one appreciate that, right? But there are other forms of disabilities. I remember, I'm not sure about the name, Malabane. He did a program on Sundays. He interviewed disabled persons. Let's see. But anyway, I'm out of the name. He used to have a program where he would interview disabled persons with different disabilities. He would ask them, for example, he had an interview with me, asking me when did they become disabled, a car accident, and something about my background. The point I want to add on, so that you must see more disabled persons visible on TV, so that people would not see disabled persons as people who are locked up, you know. It must become a general sight. It must become, hence I was saying, it's not only deaf people who should feature on TVs, but people with all kinds of disabilities. There are programs for people with epilepsy, for example, or programs about them. You got disabled people who serve on in many positions in society, senior positions, so that those disabled persons must be exposed, so that people must know disabled people, it's not only people who are disabled and they can do nothing, but they also make a contribution in life. So the issue for exposing people with disabilities on TV must be much broader. That's just the idea I'm trying to put across to you. The budget. You know, if you don't have a strategy and policy, obviously then one can understand why you can't get money. But I want to emphasize the point Andrew Mandela made. This thing of budgeting and saying we don't have money, we don't don't have resources. That is one of the things I don't want to hear again. If you have powerful poverty, come to us and lobby us so that we can assist you in that regard. That is really something unacceptable. My question would then be, how much of your money do you use per annum? How many millions is there all over, Elizabeth, that they don't use? Why you would have needed maybe 6 million rand for a particular problem for disabled persons? I'm saying that to me, it's not on. It's not an excuse. It's not an acceptable excuse to me. Hence I was saying earlier to Andrew, you were not negative. You were just speaking the truth. My other question would be, do you have disabled producers? Disabled is not a person like me in a wheelchair only. It's not a person like the chairperson of us who make use of sign language only. The issue of disability is much broader. Those people with epilepsy, those people who walk with crutches, you get those people who have one arm, one leg, you know. What I do appreciate is what you do for disabled sports. But those disabled persons, Van Dijk, the swimmer, what's her name? Natalie. And I was saying, Pastor, we need to expose disabled persons more, not only on the terrain of sports, but also in the whole society at large. And that to me is important, because it's also so unfortunate that these people who are exposed, who are disabled, it's only the white people, which is only but 10% of our population. There are millions outside. There are much more black disabled persons who have achieved a lot, who have very interesting stories that I think you can show on TV. Jefferson, for now, I have my case.
Honourable, sex is quite a mouthful. Honourable member, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to comment that it is appreciated if everybody is coming on board trying to understand and accommodate disabilities. But also I will comment that we have inherited a system of working from other civilizations. So the tendency is to work in silos, to reinvent wheels, I would say. I find it strange that PANSALP will be saying there are no interpreters who are trying to get money to train, we wish this, and then SABC will also be saying same thing from their angle. I think I just need to comment and say we do need to, you know, break away from the old-fashioned way of doing things. Open a window, create a channel, and let these bodies talk and come up with something. I'm sure there can be an enrichment. It's just a comment. If bodies that use language, I mean, everybody uses language, but if bodies that work a lot on language, if they could just talk, we could come up with a solution to some of our problems. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I just would like to add on to the comments and questions that were made. The State of the Nation address, that is a very important address. I just want to inform you that DEFSA doesn't call the SABC. then I will tell you that there will be no sign language interpreter on TV, because we make, DEFSA will call, and apparently the answer was, I think for this year was, oh, so sorry, we made no preparation, it's too late. And I think you know well in beforehand when these statements are going to be made, when the budget speech is going to be made, and so forth. We were just recently in Namibia, and I was very much shocked. There was interpreters on the news every night. Christmas Day, the president delivered his speech, and there was a sign language interpreter, and that was in Namibia. I was watching TV, and I had access in that country to a sign language interpreter on their broadcasting corporation. When I came back home on New Year's Eve, when my president was delivering his speech, I had no access to that speech. What was he saying to me as a deaf person, as a citizen of this country? When I read a document and it was given out, I see broadcasting for total citizen empowerment. I question that for myself here, because whether I'm a total citizen empowerment, am I getting that total citizen empowerment for access? I'm lucky, I'm fortunate enough, because I read a lot, I read the books, newspapers. But those on the ground, many of them cannot afford the newspapers, cannot afford books. They depend on the TV for information. Then that research that you were talking about, I'm very much interested in that research. However, I must admit I don't agree that language, we have different languages in the sense of Venda, Khoza. We have one South African sign language, just one South African sign language. As you say, dialects, yes, we do, but it's one South African sign language with many dialects. That's. I also happen to be a chairperson of Deaf Federation of South Africa, and when we have national meetings, all come from the province, and I use one South African sign language, and all of them from all those provinces understand me completely. We all South African sign language interpreters are expected to know this language. We don't have Venda sign language, Khoza sign language. We have one sign language, and it is proven. It has been proven. That's just the information. Then I agree with honourable members. I sat in communications portfolio from 1999 to 2004, and we had the board quite presently there. Fadila, you were there as well. But and we had members who were disabled also sitting on that board. But as you're saying, that the strategy was only a disability strategy was only the interpreter's looking for a word adopted last year. So I'm just saying, I'm just wondering as to why it took so long for that strategy to be adopted only last year. Just looking through my notes here. I also agree with members that the subtitling, it's not just only for the deaf. There are many, as you were saying, many of our people, when they become older, they become deafened, become deaf through accidents, and many of our children, for example, my children who's hearing, have access now to subtitling, and they can now read, you know. I don't care what language it is, to be quite honest with you, but subtitling is important. I can see it myself within my own family. I'm a deaf mother. My first child, I sign completely with my child. So I was worried as to whether he will pick up the language. So early on in his life, I had Barney, but Barney fully subtitled, and he picked up that language as a hearing child. He's very good in his languages at school. With my second child, I see that she never used the subtitling, and she uses signs more than actually speaking to me. So, and she had to repeat grade one because of her language. But my first child, with him being exposed to subtitling, it actually developed his language very well. Living in America, I had full access, and there was 90% access. Deaf grandparents will tell me that they have deaf grandchildren, and the child cannot read, but when the child sees these words on the TV, the deaf grandparent will then sign it to the deaf grandchild. And it also creates an opportunity for the grandparent and the grandchild to have a bond. So it creates a lot of other things, this subtitling. If deaf mothers can't, for example, if there's bad language on TV, we as deaf mothers don't know what has been said on TV, and the subtitling actually helps us to show us what child is watching. So for me, I must say to you, subtitling is very, very important, especially as a deaf mother. And recently this week or last week, we saw digital, I think you mentioned something, Gordon, you spoke to the portfolio committee on communications, or it was on the news, I can't remember what, and as I said, I don't have access to TVs, but I just saw something regarding digital. Digital technology, and that's all I saw. I just saw the word digital, that's all. And obviously I couldn't understand what this meant by it. So is it a change from analog to digital technology? Is it coming now or is it coming later? Its time frame, are we already in the digital age? Do we have that technology now already? I have lots of questions, as you can see, but I think you need to just answer all those questions first. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. As you understand, the responses will come from the different panel members. And as you would gather, obviously the responses will differ from what the board says and what management says. But I would really like to preface my response just by indicating that the frustration that we have broadly as a society in conscientizing those who are abled about issues that affect all of us generally, but most importantly those that affect people with disabilities, are frustrations that we face internally at SABC as well. So it starts with the conscientization of management, of staff, of everyone, that it is important that we integrate everything that we do as the regulatory framework requires us to do. But not only because of the regulatory framework, because everyone is part of that citizenship that we broadcast for. So it's a conscientization process that takes long. And this is why you find that even after 4 years, the strategy was only really, it just kept on going this way and that way. We disagreed. It took us a long time just to get to have a strategy. And I did appeal as well to say, once we adopted the strategy, integrating that into the budget, and I do not want to walk out of here leaving an impression that I said we do not have the budget, we do not have the funding. But integrating and ensuring that in everything that we do, there is funding consciously for every office, for everything that we do, even as we organize events, even as we schedule programs, State of the Nation address into our programs, even that management has to be conscious that they have to do a double budgeting to make sure that we cater for everyone. So it's that consciousness that takes long, where we result, where we then say, at this point in time, that consciousness, that work is ongoing. It has not been catered for in all of the areas. And Fadila indicated that currently, I mean, for the last number of years that she's been on the board, she did not have access to toilet facilities. It's just as simple as it. But in the new structure, we have very detailed specifications and making sure that we have that access. And for instance, what we did as well previously was to visit different regional offices of the SABC. Just in the reception area, if a person who cannot see, who cannot hear properly, goes into the building, there's no one at reception to interpret. That's the first thing that we've identified, that just coming into the buildings of the SABC, there's difficulties in entering those buildings. And those are the processes that we are making sure that as we renovate buildings, just in that area, there is a budget for that access. In every program, and I spoke about separately about the industry development charter that we're developing. The consciousness that even as we do that outside of the SABC, we need to make sure that there are producers who are able to develop programs that cater for all sorts of access. But all of that is taking long because people are used to doing things in a particular way. But it takes a long time to just change the consciousness and the culture of thinking. And this is where I spoke about consistency. And I think you correctly identified, Chairperson, the same thing that we identified as well. And remember that our role as a board is to develop policy and agree on strategy, but the implementation lies elsewhere in the organization. And this is what we're picking up, that people do not do this consistently. This is where I spoke about consistency, and we are striving towards that consistency. In the news bulletins, and when Jackie was making a presentation, certain news bulletins had sign languages. The prime ones that are required by regulation to ensure that there is sign language, there's no sign language, and it's been something that we've been saying. And I do want to take responsibility as a board that we have to ensure that every decision, every policy is implemented and it is budgeted for. So it's just shortfalls here and there that we have identified as well. I think going forward, we're trying to address those issues. And I started with the issue of consistency deliberately because I know that it's an issue that we are struggling with. I'm not making an apology for it. It's just glaring on SABC. It is not consistent in the news bulletins. We have, I don't know how many news bulletins in a day, not only on television but on radio as well. And you do not find that there's access, equal access for everyone on all of those news bulletins, and that is what I was referring to. I wasn't trying to say we're ignoring that, but it's something that we have identified. So just in terms of broad policy, we have taken long because we had to start internally and make sure that everybody understands, and we're not there yet, and I do not want to sit here and walk out of here saying we are there, we are fully there. There are gaps as you are regulars or consumers of what we produce on air. You can see that there is inconsistency, and we are trying to address this. But also the consciousness of making sure that every producer inside and outside of SAPC is aware that there are other sections of the community, of the public, that we are not fully catering for, and how do we move towards it. So that's what I was trying to address. I will ask the other members of the team, Jackie, can respond to the other areas as well. Thank you. Ufadila?
Thank you. I feel personally responsible, Chair, of the Portfolio Committee to respond to this one, why the strategy took so long. It's a very fair question. And I started also by saying that I struggled with a toilet, and it's only now that there are toilets. So there's a personal struggle inside. As you all know, you had those struggles when you came here. But to get the people who do the implementation, it's so difficult. And I'm not making excuses at all. Where I became, and I think the whole board became very cautious, as you see out in the media now, is the fine line between oversight and micromanagement. Now, sometimes I felt like going to take the brick and the hammer myself and knock the walls down and build the darn toilet myself. But that is not my job. There's somebody else that needs to do that. And the same with the strategy. I took a long time for them to take them through literature, gave them lots of stuff. But then we also have a policy that board members cannot do work for remuneration outside of their board position. So I couldn't get more than that involved in the strategy than guiding management. And in guiding management, it needed a paradigm shift in their own thinking and understanding. So really it was an education process that took so long. I mean, it did also, I needed to educate the board members around my own needs. And once we came to, Form Festival in Cape Town? Yeah, the Form Festival, and management organized viewings in in a room where I couldn't go. And the chairperson, she wasn't chairperson at the time, and she said, no, if Adila can't get in, I'm also not going in. So a couple of board members then just stayed and didn't go. So that's at least where I got to, where people are now saying this is not her issue, it's our issue, and we need to address it together. But we do need your support in monitoring these things consistently so that we are, as board, is protected so that we don't cross that fine line of micromanagement versus macromanagement.
Thank you. I will try and address some of the comments and questions that have been made. Starting with the, I also wanted to just add a little bit on the issue of lack of consistency. Not only it's not just about the fact that we don't subtitle everything, but it's also when we do subtitle that there's no consistency there. When I spoke about, you know, the different fonts or the different size or the different colors. So we acknowledge that, and that's something that we are going to work towards. What has come out of the study, of course, is, and it's not an excuse, but it's a reality that there are a lack of skills in terms of areas of translations for television, because it is a specialized area. It's not just about getting somebody who can translate. It's about somebody who understands the medium of television. You'll appreciate that the screen is very small, so you need someone who will be able to kind of summarize what's going on without actually losing the meaning of what is intended. So that skill is very specialized, and as part of our strategy going forward, and Ms. Nkosi alluded to that, that we are looking at really training in the area of subtitling so that we can get that quality up. The next question was around why can we not simultaneously subtitle the President's speech when he opens Parliament. I think the issue, again, is around skill, but mostly also around the technology, that we don't have that technology at the moment as the SABC, because you know, it's all live and it's all very technical, and I'm also trying to understand it. But as the President speaks, you need somebody. There's almost like a voice recognition of what the President is saying, and then what would happen, that would then translate into subtitles. So it's an automatic process. So we just, I guess, haven't got to that stage, and it's something that has been highlighted also in the study, that it's something that we need to go forward, because I agree, everybody should be getting the same message at the same time and not delayed. On the issue of a partial subtitling, I think why I'm excited about the research study is that finally we can get to a place where we can set quotes, where we can set targets, where channels will be able to say on my channel for this fiscal coming, there'll be X percentage of programs in South African Sign Language, there'll be X percent of programs in prime time which will be subtitled. Because there hasn't really been a strategy in terms of programming in that area, I think that's why the inconsistencies, where on SABC2 they've been very consistent in terms of wall-to-wall subtitling, because SABC2 understands the mandate and also because they carry lots of the national events. But maybe on some channels, you know, maybe that hasn't been taken seriously, and I think because there hasn't really been that framework, and I think going forward we're going to have that, because we now know what the viewers are needing, we now understand, and we need now to get to a place where we enforce this and it becomes part of what SABC does, in a sense.
With regards to the employment equity stats, we've struggled within the HR subcommittee. I was a member of the HR subcommittee previously, for them to report, when they report on the statistics, that they lift out disability But that wasn't done, and mainly because I think they were ashamed to write note in most of the divisions, if you look at senior management, middle management, and so forth, and then also the divisions. And I've asked that they actually do write the note, because when you write the note, it will hit home that I actually need to do something. There is nobody in this division or in this demographic. So at the moment, we are way under what we should be. I unfortunately do not have the exact statistic with me, but we are terribly underrepresented with regards to disability. And as HR chairperson now, I want to make the commitment that at least the reporting we will get correct, so that we can give you a better statistic next time we come. But then coupled with that, the sensitization workshops that have started, hopefully that will lead to management understanding the need to employ disabled people, and then coupled with that, to budget for that employment, which is currently, as we've said, not in the cycle budget.
The two questions I'd like to respond to. The one is a concern around job rotation. It is, in fact, job enhancement. The idea is to expose people to the different areas of broadcasting so that in the end they have a broader understanding of the industry. And the other one is DTT. DTT is a technological migration from the analog system that we are currently in to a digital environment. And the plan is to test November this year, and with the commercial launch around April, May. And the intention is to fully roll out in 2011. That is a 3-year rollout plan.
Just on from a regulatory framework, and also to just add on DTT, one of the things that we've been discussing with ICASA that has been confusing is there's been changes for example, of the code. It was revised, there was a new act, and therefore we needed to position ourselves in terms of firstly what are the basic requirements legislatively and from the regulator. And I think this also impacted negatively. Without sounding defensive, it also impacted negatively in terms of how do you start to ensure that, firstly, you comply before you can really do on a full-blown your public mandate service. Now, one of the things that came strongly was how do we start exploiting the DTT, and I think quite a lot has been said about DTT. But what is most interesting about it is that when we were auditing the problems that you have, for example, in terms of accessibility, in terms of our content, we found that DTT provides quite a lot of solutions. And we're looking forward to the pilot that is starting in November. And I think from the question that was raised as to what is this about, you might be aware that we're still waiting for the policy from the minister, the final policy in terms of the digital migration policy. And after that, all operators will be able to position themselves to know exactly what the policy requires of us. But the SABC has been taking the initiative, and it's highly integral in terms of ensuring that DTT comes. And I think one of the priorities that also we looked at is how we ensure that everybody starts to have access to our broadcasting services. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Information that I can possibly forward after this meeting in writing is the specifics on the employment equity that I can definitely provide, break it down into the different levels and the different areas. I can also provide information on disabled producers in the different provinces if we have them. So I can follow up and make sure that I provide that in writing through you, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Just before I'm giving over to the members to ask questions, just a question on the digital environment. When this digital environment has been established, do they need to buy new televisions? Will their televisions be able to accommodate this new digital environment? And with regards to DSTV, they have the facility where you can choose subtitles or not. But for the SABC, will you have a remote, a decoder? Because for the public to buy all those decoders in order to fit into this new digital environment, can you be able to tell us what will be the implications for the public? And I was trying to see if this team can answer, because the deaf people have been asking me the question. If you buy videos from overseas, SABC, like movies, the SABC, you buy movies. Those movies you are shown here, and then on our television it says CC for closed captioning. Closed captioning, but it doesn't. But we don't have it here because we don't have that facility. And the deaf have been asking if that movie was bought with the closed captioning. But then it was explained to us then you need to have a decoder. But why is the CC then coming up on the television program? And in your production companies for the SABC, they've seen the televisions here. The production companies say that they do have these closed captionings in their production houses, but when it's broadcasted, it was taken off. Why is it being taken off if it's been broadcasted to the public? And then also in relation to the research, there was a research done before, and I'm not sure if it was done via DEFSA or the South African National Council of the Deaf, but that research showed that deaf people do not want to see hearing people, saying that they do not want to see these closed captioning or the subtitles on the television, hearing people complaining. And is that still the notion with hearing people? Do they still complain? Does that still bother them? And then, you know, then they had the interpreters bigger, and the public complained they don't want those interpreters so big on the screen. And it's hearing people complaining because they're saying it's bothering. That was the first day of Deaf Awareness Week when the 7 o'clock news was broadcasted with the sign language interpreter, the English news, and the next day it was taken off because the hearing public complained. And if you say digital, will there be, you said that there would be more channels. Does it mean that can we have then bigger interpreters on the news or what? But I believe that, but the public, it's because of attitudes, and the people are not aware of people with disabilities, and that's why these notions are coming up. Honourable members, do you have questions? Honourable Madela.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for the answer, and in particular, Chair, for your promise to come back to us with those figures. I just want to emphasize that we, as a committee, will definitely not take it lying down with the negative figures that you will be presenting to us. Certainly, government has set a target of 2%, and we would insist that that target be reached. Okay. I must just say, Comrade Chair, that it does seem that ETV is making an effort. I know ETV has been contacting us as Disabled People South Africa, and they've asked for people to be, their names to be put forward, and many of them are employed at ETV, and I'm not quite sure why our own broadcaster is failing us so miserably, Chair. I also need to ask a question. I think the young lady who's heading a unit indicated earlier that simultaneous subtitling is not possible because of a lack of the required technology. Now, SABC is the broadcasting house in the continent of Africa. Everyone in Africa is looking at us. And we are now hearing that we don't have the required, the requisite technology to do simultaneous subtitling, as you have explained. I think both Fadila and yourself have explained that, so it's a little bit strange to me that we don't have that technology, and why can't we acquire that technology, and whether DTT is going to, is that the answer, Jay? And then, of course, we have heard, I mean, I'm not quite sure whether it was yourself or Ikasa that made a presentation at the Communication Portfolio Committee the other day, I think last week or so, explaining the whole issue of DTT and raising also the time frames that you have raised now, but also indicating that they are waiting the policy from the from the minister. But there was also an issue of costs, that a device that needs to be bought would be to an extent subsidized. I think that is the idea at the current moment in time. But of course, there are concerns with regard to whether, because it's a requirement of 2010, that it has to be up and functioning by that time. And yet, in our case, we are saying that it will be the current one that we are having will completely be of no use in 2011. So the critical question indeed is, how far are we? Are we really ready? Is the pilot that I'm understanding now that will be launched in November, how big will that pilot be? What is the cost of the device? And especially to the poorest of the poor. And the one thing that I just want to emphasize, that disabled people indeed rank among the poorest of the poor. You see, because of disability, they are not accommodated in our educational streams, and because of that, they do not have the necessary skills to market themselves, and they indeed are completely left at the mercy of our government in terms of living on the under disability grant. So I think the issue of the cost implication of that, and if you can elaborate a little bit more around the pilot, the sample of that pilot study that will be launched at the end of this year. Thank you.
Just very.
So you want to say something, Chetan?
No. I thought it was my turn to respond, but I wasn't aware that there was two questions.
Sorry.
I apologize.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, Chairperson, just a request and a comment. Since you don't report to us this committee, you are making a presentation to us. I think it's important, Chairperson, that either through the chair of Adila, who is representing the disabled, that we need to be informed on issues on disabilities. And even if we need to be lobbied, I think that's important, so that we can also make our contribution. Chairperson, just one comment now. I'm from Saldanha Bay, and there we speak Afrikaans. One of my colored friends there was saying to me, "Yo, Max, this is way men's up TV, no, yo. Ah, what's my auntie service? I was like, 60 in the combine." So I want the same thing to happen for disabled persons. Thank you, sir.
Before I hand over to the chair of SABC, I have just one more question I want to ask you. The terminology that is being used, hearing impaired, is not the terminology that we use, because I'm not broken. Deaf, and that's the terminology we use within the disability sector, deaf. And then to cover everybody, you will say deaf
/hard of hearing. That's the terminology that we will use for everybody. I'm not broken, I am just deaf, that's all. Then I just want to add to what Honorable Andrew was saying. 2010, when South Africa won that bid to host the 2010, the deaf overseas is emailing us, and asking us questions like, is your broadcasting corporate, is your TV accessible? Do you have, a captioning and so forth? So I just want you to keep that in mind, the preparations for 2010 as well. And then from the deaf community, we wanted to know why, when the deaf community is sleeping late at night, then you have sign language interpreters on TV. That's a question the deaf has been asking me. For example, the sign language interpreters for sport, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, they sleep in that time. So they come to me and they ask me those questions. We are sleeping that time, they say, and then the sign language interpreter is 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock. So that means that the deaf are not benefiting once again. So the interpreters are benefiting financially, let me just tell you that, and not the deaf. We are not getting access, but the interpreters are getting paid, and they are benefiting, but not us at that time. They are sleeping that time. I'm just taking my questions here quickly. I strongly support what Pan Salib said. Those 5:30 interpreters, I switch off the TV. I don't watch TV at that time. We don't understand a thing. And yes, you're right. One of them wrote a letter to DEFSA, and who said, he himself said, I don't understand vendor, but I interpret vendor. I can give you that letter. We met with SABC, but I just want to ask you, and I plead with you, SABC, when the deaf community meets, don't have a defending attitude, because we've come across that the SABC as very defensive when we talk to you about these issues. It's about access, ultimately, for us as deaf people. But we've come across, when we raise these issues with the management or with the staff of SABC, there's a defensive attitude that we get. I actually want to, I think it was about the licensee, about Vicasa, giving a penalty if they were not, if sign language was not on TV. And that was the answer given to us, that we're keeping them because we'll be punished, we'll get a fine from Vicasa. But at the end of the day, we as a deaf community did not benefit at all from that services. And basically, we never understood what was being said. So I do want to say thank you and applaud you for the initiative, but it did not benefit the deaf at all. I'll give over to you, Chair, and then I'll make my final remarks and before closing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Just to explain the digital technology environment, and Bessie will add on to that. The time frames are not determined by SAPC, they're determined by the Department of Communications. We have to comply with that. And there are certain set-top boxes, the specifications of which are determined also by the department. We have to comply with that. I think Bessie will explain that there's two types of set-top boxes, and these are the decoders. There's one that has a full access, and there's one with conditional access. And whichever ones are used, it's a determination of the Department of Communications. But all of that obviously has cost implications. The ones with the basic access are the cheaper ones. The ones with conditional access, as you see, this is what multi-choice has, the conditional access ones. Those are the more expensive ones. But all of those things are determined by the Department of Communications, and that's the policy that they have to set. ICASA has to set regulations for all broadcasters in that particular area. And they will determine things like how many channels for SABC, how many channels that are left or in the spectrum, how much of that spectrum is allocated to commercial broadcasters, to community broadcasters. All of those will be determined outside of the SABC. So a certain amount of spectrum will be allocated for public broadcaster, a certain amount for commercial broadcasters. What we've been saying, I think, in our entirety as the industry, is that we are waiting for those policy guidelines so that we can start planning. And it does affect our planning because up to now the policy is not very clear and it is difficult. This is why we keep going with what Bessie describes as a soft launch, and I think she should be detailed about what the soft launch really means in November. But what it means is that from November 2008 until November 2011, there will be digital double illumination, which means that some people will still be on analog and some people will be on digital technology. Until 2011, everyone after that date in November 2011 will be forced or will be obliged to be on digital technology. What I'm not sure, I think the technology people might explain whether it requires. I know it requires set-top boxes for everyone, especially after 2011. What I'm not sure whether it requires, we need new television sets. That's the part I think that Bessie will respond to. But I just wanted to explain that broad framework that has to be determined by the Department of Communications. And it is ICASA that was in front of that was presenting to the Communications Portfolio Committee last week. It was not SABC. But I'll ask Bessie to add on that the DGT process. Thank you.
Thank you. It's true. There are two types of set-top boxes. A set-top box is similar to what DSTV has, a decoder. It does the same thing. The difference between the two that the chairperson spoke about is that the one that is cost effective has limited technology. The one that SABC is preferring is the one that will come slightly costly, but we believe that most of our people will be able to afford it. That's the one that's going to enable us to deliver on audio streaming, as well as the text streaming that I spoke about earlier. The pilots that we're talking about, there are going to be about 3,000 set-top boxes that are going to be allocated to different people in different areas, and those are the conditioned one, where the access is conditioned, because we're wanting to test the ones that we prefer, so that by the time we launch, we have proper feedback in terms of how it works and what are the gaps and what are the weaknesses, and be able to make an informed decision at the time of launch. The cost is currently projected at around 400 per box. It sounds very expensive now, but we have been told by the manufacturers that as they produce bulk, the cost will also decrease. So we're hoping that by the time we're able to launch full, the cost would have decreased largely so that more people are able to afford it. The other issue around the content that is being acquired internationally that has closed captioning. Yes, it is true that we do ask the producers or the suppliers to remove it because the current system that we're using, analog, does not enable us to allow you to be able to access those captions. That is our problem.
Just to add, I think there was one critical issue raised, also the bread and butter issue in terms of affordability and whether there's an intention to subsidize. That is a policy question that actually the industry body, in terms of the report that was sent to the minister to say there's going to be a need to cross-subsidize that. But like the chairperson has indicated, until the final policy comes to clear this kind of critical issues, it is very difficult at this stage to really make any conclusion around what is to happen. But that met has been raised by the industry as a serious impediment in terms of accessibility, given also the current economic situation where we find ourselves. Really, that becomes a real concern. And I think also the SABC are looking at that, but we're waiting to hear the minister's response in terms of policy on that issue. The other question I think that was raised around this pilot was, you know, how big it is, who is involved. I think maybe can also expatiate that. I think it's around 1,000 samples.
No, I did say it's 3,000.
Oh, 3,000.
On readiness, I was hoping that somebody would respond to on the issue of readiness for 2010 and Betty.
On readiness, we are ready. In fact, when we pilot, we will be piloting a 24-hour sports channel. And on that platform, we're going to have a bouquet of about four channels. It's going to be our three, the SABC 1, 2, and 3, as well as the sports channels. That's what we'll be piloting.
I think we're done, Chair, but I think the point that I wanted to comment on, just as a comment, that we appreciate the ability that we can have access to members of this committee, especially in terms of lobbying, and I'm speaking here on behalf of the board, because it is very difficult. And I think, as Fadila explained earlier on, that firstly she has to educate me about some of the issues that are really pertinent to this sector of the community, because I also have to understand myself if I have to make sure that internally it is understood clearly. So we appreciate the fact that we can have the interaction and we can possibly invite members of this committee to be part of the work that we have to do internally. It is a huge amount of work, and we're not even half capable of doing that work ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before we close, I just want to say SABC 2, 8:30 in the evening, the news. I see you before you had, I don't call it subtitling because it's not fully, but it was like a summary where you basically take off some information that I think somebody from the Portfolio Committee of Communications was saying it was also a pilot, but it will be coming back. Will that be coming back? I'm asking this because I'm going to give answers back to my constituency this constituency time, that's why. So will it be coming back again? Thank you.
I'm speaking as the General Manager of SABC 2. Yes, it will be coming back.
Okay, fine, thank you. Honourable Andrew, I see you. Please, you on the loss. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, this is now a question in the future. These set-top boxes that would be a requirement, especially post-2011, will we be seeing new television sets that where there's no need to require a set-top box, but the digital system will be built into the television, and will that not drastically increase the price? I know you would not be one of the manufacturers, but you know those are things that are in your mind, especially if you're interacting and you're representing the poorest of the poor. In my community, my constituency are not a rich one, and that is Elves River. And these are the kind of questions that I'm being asked, Ajay.
We have been convinced and want to believe that it is true, that we will not, at least for the next 5 years, need to buy a new set of television. We will be able to use the television set that we currently have. The only new thing that we would need is the set-top box that will enable us to access digital television.
If you can, the one you are going to buy a new TV, digital TVs already exist. It's a bit pricey, but you can already buy it so that in a year's time when this happens, you won't need the set-top box.
Okay, thank you. We will thank the SABC for your presentation today to us. There are some points that, for example, we asked you to email us some statistics and so forth. If you can get us that, as well as copies of the various policies that you were speaking about, as well as the editorial policy of the SABC, I would like members, if you could just read that, and we can maybe pose more questions later again. As Honorable Mars was saying, we would prefer to have an ongoing relationship with you, and obviously to hear more about your work, obviously affecting the sector that we're focusing on, I mean, people with disabilities. So once again, I just want to say thank you for your time, and it's been a long day, but thank you for your presentation today to us. Honorable members, thank you for your time and your participation. So thank you once again. Meeting is closed. Thank you.